members. The time now is just minutes after 8. I want to welcome you on this day, all of you on the platform, our honorable members, the teams that are going to be part of this meeting from Stats SA, South African Reserve Bank, Information Regulator, members of the media and the public. I want to welcome you on this day, the 5th of December, 2023. This is a day that marks our 10th anniversary since the departure of our icon, the first democratic president, President Nelson Mandela. It's 10 years since that day. It's therefore a very important day. I also at the same time want to acknowledge and take note of the sad news of one of our members, Honorable Pillay, who lost his brother, a second brother, in a short space of time, in the last 2 or 3 days. We want to pray for your strength, Honorable Pillay, during this difficult time. And I would have noticed that, as you always are, a very disciplined member, you would have even been on the platform before 10. It's highly appreciated that you still here with us, even during such difficult time. So with that, honorable members, I want to thank all of you. And I want to check Ms. Moy if there's any apologies that we have.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, everyone on the platform. Yes, Chair, I received 2 apologies. One from Honorable McGlover. She's attending another meeting. And the second one, Chairperson, is from the SG. The SG will be with us until 10:45, Chairperson, because at 11, he's scheduled to release the country's headquarter GDP. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Moy. I think those apologies are in order. Are we all agreed that we accept and proceed? Thank you. That silence means consent. We're not going to waste any time, therefore, honorable members. We have set this day, and you would have seen the program. It's quite a longish program where we have lined up quite a number of presentations arising from our discussions last week about the State SA Amendment Bill. So today we have first up identified and requested that South African Reserve Bank and make a presentation to be followed obviously by Stats SA, Information Regulator, and our Parliamentary Legal Services will also come in. We would have Ms. Moy on the presentation of the motion. We'll have deliberations from the members, and members would have even started that last week, and I asked them to put that on hold. So that's quite a longish day. Those that must log in for other meetings attend can do so, but remain in this meeting so that we need you to participate. So we don't need any silent presence in today's meeting. And so with that, I don't know who is, we were given a name for, I think it's Oratel for South African Reserve Bank. I don't know if they are on the platform, Ms. Moy. Are they here with us and are they ready for the presentation?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Chair, Ms. Orateng is on the platform.
Okay, let me welcome you, Ms. Orateng from the South African Reserve Bank. We have invited Saab to come. Saab was the only institution that made a submission by the 24th of November, which was our deadline for the submissions. We discussed that yesterday, I mean, last week, Friday, and we felt that it's important that today we allow you to make a presentation on what we have received. And so I want to invite you and allow you to make that presentation. But I want to just indicate upfront that in line with our own rules of Parliament, that when we open for public comment for any bill, we share a bill with all the issues that are contained in that bill. And so when people make comments, comments must therefore be confined to what is in the bill. So anything that is not in the bill that would have been open for public comment doesn't get introduced after that, no matter how important it is, because everybody else should have had an opportunity to comment on that particular issue and the bill in its entirety. And so I'm asking that you make your presentation in terms of your submission, but I'm at the same time requesting that on any issue that would not have been part of the bill that was established, don't introduce that, because if you do so, it might mean that we must restart the bill all over and allow everybody to have a say and make comment on that particular issue, which was not part of the bill that was established. So that will take us back. But even if we're to proceed, it would mean that we start from a serious discrepancy. And therefore, whatever process we do can be challengeable in any next court. And that challenge can only take 2 minutes and the case thrown out. I hope that does make sense. I'm not saying that to restrain you. Please come forward and make the presentation as prepared and as invited.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Speaker. My name is Shadaz Mia, and I'm the Assistant General Counsel within the Legal Services Department of the Reserve Bank. I will take the lead in going through the presentation today. I'm not sure do I need to be on video because if my button does not seem to be going through.
Yeah, we expect that you can show your face up front. Maybe later on you can switch it off as you speak so that we see who we're speaking to, not speaking to a ghost from the South African Reserve Bank. And you can refer to me as the chairperson of the committee. I'm not a speaker. The speaker is the one heading the institution. So don't put me there.
Thank you so much, Chair, for that correction. So, yes, so my video button is now working. And today I am joined by the head of department of our Economic Statistics Department within SARB, Michael Manamela, and Christo Pretorius and Oriteng Motsuai, both lead legal counsel within the SARB as well. They will assist me in the deliberations to the extent that there are any further questions that may arise from the meeting. So thank you very much for inviting us and for the opportunity to submit comments to this committee. The SARB is definitely in support of the broad tenets of the bill, the implementation of the National Statistics System and the National Strategy for the Development of Statistics by the Statistician General. Chairperson, can I just check whether I need to project my slides or whether Parliament will do this for me?
Ms. Moy?
Thank you, Chairperson. You can do so from your side, Ms. Chanel. I have given you right to share.
Okay, perfect. So I'm going to just press on that button. Thank you. Great. If I assume everyone can see my screen now.
Yes, we can.
Excellent. So it's on presentation mode for clarity. What I'm going to do for the purpose of this meeting is to go through my slides very quickly. The contents of my slides will really talk to the financial stability mandate of the SARB, the responsibility of organs of state, the necessity for the SARB to access information, proposed amendments on the Statistics Amendment Bill, and our conclusion. So when I want to start off on the financial stability mandate of the South African Reserve Bank, the actual constitutional mandate arises from Section 233 of the Constitution, which establishes SARB as the central bank of South Africa. In terms of Section 224, the primary object is to protect the value of the currency in the interest of balanced and sustainable growth, price stability. Section 225 in the Constitution really talks to powers and functions that is usually customarily performed by central banks. However, the Financial Sector Regulation Act, Section 11, really goes in depth talking to the financial stability mandate. It makes SARB formally responsible for protecting and enhancing financial stability. This is seen in Section 11(1)(a) of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, which we called FSRA. The SARB must have regard to the roles and functions of other organs of state exercising powers that affect aspects of the economy. Section 11(2) of FSRA specifically states that. The SARB must also monitor and keep under review strengths and weaknesses of the financial system and take steps to mitigate risks to financial stability. This is Section 12 of the FSRA Act. So if we go to what are the responsibilities of organs of state in relation to the Financial Sector Regulation Act, an organ of state is obliged to consider the implications of its activities on financial stability and the SARB's resolution functions. It is required to provide such assistance and information to the SARB and the Financial Stability Oversight Committee so as to maintain and restore financial stability as the SARB or the Financial Stability Oversight Committee may reasonably request. And this is the crux of our issue. It's Section 28 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act. So what is the necessity for the SARB to access information? The financial stability provisions in the FSR Act were created as part of the key regulatory reforms that the G20 introduced after the global financial crisis. Financial stability is the cornerstone of an economy, and it is in the public interest that it must be protected. The mandate of the Economic Statistics Department is to provide comprehensive economic and financial statistics and data in line with international best practices in support of SARB's constitutionally enshrined primary mandate of maintaining price stability as well as financial stability. In monitoring and mitigating risks to financial stability, the SARB needs to access information and enterprise level data from organs of state, including Statistics South Africa. Statistics South Africa, as the custodian and lead in official statistical production systems and official statistics, may have access to information required by the SARB for the purpose of financial stability. So the next slide really cuts to the core of the proposed amendments on the Statistics Amendment Bill. And I'll go through this very slowly. So if you look at the definitions, the SARB suggests that the Financial Sector Regulation Act definition must be included in the Stats Amendment Bill if the SARB's proposals are to be accepted. The words are merely inserted in the definition because the Act is referred to in the proposed amendments referred to under Clause 1, capital A. The crux of our issue is really Clause 1A. It's entitled Conflict with Other Legislation. And what you see on the presentation in front of you is a small amendment that SARB wants to introduce, mainly to create alignment with the Financial Sector Regulation Act and the Statistics Amendment Bill. So the clause as it currently reads says, the provisions of this Act prevail where there is a conflict relating to the matters dealt with in this Act, between this Act and the provisions of any other law, save for the Constitution or any Act expressly amending this Act. We are suggesting that the wording of this conflict clause or Clause 1A include Section 28A and B of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, because this in essence is the requirement for a requirement where SARB requires information for the purpose of financial stability from Stats SA. We really want this Clause 1A to read aligned with Section 28 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act to ensure that these two pieces of legislation talk to each other. Organs of state, the comment that we put in on the side, are obliged to provide assistance and information to the SARB for purposes of financial stability. It's an obligation. And the SARB may periodically need this information and enterprise level data that Stats SA may have access to. This proposed amendment merely ensures alignment between the FSR Act and the Amendment Bill. We have a slide, we have included a slide which is section 17, which really talks to confidentiality and disclosure. Chairperson, I note your comments at the beginning of the presentation saying that we must be cognizant of not introducing anything new that may affect the processing of this bill. So what I'll talk to the slide, and maybe later on as we hear the presentation, we can probably discuss Section 17, as I think it's mentioned in a few presentations that go after me, in terms of how we can move forward on our proposed amendment in line of some of the views that an amendment to Section 17 may in fact require a further process. So the proposed wording that we have was merely to align with the amendment proposed under Section 1, capital A, and it was really to bring to align it with Section 1A. The Section 17(2) amendment, where we talk to being allowed to get confidential information disclosed to SARB officials, was also an input from us, merely to align the new Section 1A amendment that we have proposed. So I don't really want to dwell on Section 17, merely to other than to say it was really created by the proposed amendment was created by us to ensure alignment of all the relevant legislation in light of Section 1, capital A. So before I get to the conclusion, I also have to acknowledge that both Stats SA and the SARB do have an MOU in place. That MOU has been in place since 2020 and regulates data sharing within our respective mandates. There needs to be recognition and alignment of the financial stability mandate with the primary law of FSRA and the Statistics Act, which is why we're making our submission today. During discussions between Stats SA and ourselves, we have also discussed as a solution, protocols and regulation which is being developed. Whilst the SAAB is fully in support of this and will participate in such development, we emphasize that protocols are second-tier legislation that are still in development phase. Moreover, these protocols can only work subject to the primary law that enable them. Therefore, there is a special need to ensure that the two primary laws, namely the Financial Sector Regulation Act and the Stats Bill, align and do not conflict to the extent that the SAAB may be inhibited from receiving the information it requires for the purpose of financial stability. This alignment will ensure that the SAAB can exercise its public interest function effectively. We have also considered information sharing for the purpose of the Papaya Act. And in this case, particular granular data is required. For example, it's non-financial corporation information, not necessarily information of individuals. This is in terms of our G20 obligation to create an accurate compilation of financial stability information. When this information is received, the SAAB is cognizant that it is afforded the confidentiality protection of Section 33 of the SAAB Act, and this information will be utilized for the very limited purpose of our financial stability mandate, adhering strictly to the requirements of Papaya. So in conclusion, it is imperative that the Amendment Bill recognizes the SAAB's public interest mandate of protecting and enhancing financial stability, monitoring and keeping under review the strengths and weaknesses of the financial system, and mitigating any risks to financial stability. It is necessary and in the public interest for the Amendment Bill and the FSR Act to align to ensure that the Economic Statistics Department of the SAAB can access enterprise-level data that is required to protect, enhance, and mitigate risks to financial stability. Thank you very much, Chair. That concludes our presentation for this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Mier. Chinas, thank you very much for your presentation. Hopefully all of us would have followed you and all the emphasis you're making. Maybe at this stage would be for me to just call on any member who has a clarity or question at this stage for Ms. Mier on what has been presented. Before we proceed to the next, so that we don't leave anything that is unclear, I recognize Honorable Graham, followed by Honorable Mani.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to the SAAB for the presentation. And I'd like to thank the presenter for the final statement she made, because my concern around SAAB's access to this information related specifically to whether or not it would contravene the Poppy Act. And the clarity that she provided on that has made me feel far more comfortable with the changes that they are requesting. So I just wanted to say that I'm now feel like I'm comfortable with the request. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Graham. Honorable Mani.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, everyone. I don't know if I'm audible. I'm in the bus here, Chair, and on these listening devices.
You are audible, Honorable Mani.
Thank you. Yeah. Firstly, let me apologize for joining the meeting later. I wanted to switch on when I'm in the bus. I just got the tail end, the chairperson, of your comments before the presentation. In the presentation itself, what I was not clear about is what are the implications of this request. Stats SA currently is having all kinds of problems with people that just feel that Stats SA is intrusive in their lives. And Stats SA has been at pains explaining to everyone that that information is purely for this. Now, if you are now going to have Stats SA as some kind of a funnel for people to be accessed in ways which they just don't know about, because basically what we're dealing with here is that I'm hearing the Reserve Bank saying we must have a backroom arrangement. And I'm not saying this in a negative sense, but we must have a backroom arrangement where information that you have, you can officially give it to us and all of that. I'm just nervous. And I hear that there could have been a box ticked on Popia and all of that. But I just think that this, maybe what needs to happen for this thing to happen the way it's being proposed, maybe SARB must go public and make their intentions clear that they want to use this information. And also, Chairperson, I'm just not so sure whether, in fact, what SARB is asking for here is to get information that they have not paid for. You know, why is it that maybe SARB cannot be a co-sponsor of this whole project, of even census or anything else? Why can't SARB sponsor so that it's known that there is some kind of a relationship publicly between SARB and State SA? Yeah, Chairperson, I might have been waffling here, but my gut feeling is that
certainly not waffling.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Okay. I've got butterflies with this. I'm not comfortable, Chairperson. I may not know what I don't know, but the sound of this thing I'm not resting peacefully, Chairperson. But anyway, yeah, we'll hear what Mr. Maduleke says. But I'm nervous about this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Manyi. Thank you very much for your contribution. Those were the two hands that sought clarities, and Honorable Graham, it would have been covered about your mentioning of the role of information regulator in relation to the Popia Act, and Honorable Manyi has raised those for clarities from your side at this stage. So I come back to you, Ms. Mier. You've listened to both members, just your responses.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my point around Popia was received satisfactorily. So I think I need to comment on Honorable Mani's discomfort with some of the proposals of SARB. So what I need to say is, if you look at information that SARB wants to acquire, it's not new, it's not through the back door, it's really going through the mandate of the SARB, which is to protect and maintain financial stability, which was given to the SARB in terms of the Financial Sector Regulation Act. More than that, it's also not a backdoor, mainly because if you look at Section 28, which I highlight in my presentation, organs of state are actually under an obligation. So the law says an organ of state must provide such assistance and information to the Reserve Bank and the Financial Stability Oversight Committee so as to maintain and restore financial stability as the bank or the committee may reasonably request. So this is not a may function. This is actually a must function. So it's an obligation on organs of state to provide this information. And the reason this was passed in terms of the Financial Sector Regulation Act means that the law and parliament has recognized the function of the SARB in protecting financial stability. This provision is really mainly done to align the Financial Sector Regulation Act with the provisions of the Statistics Amendment Bill, and is not there's no underlying other motive other than in ensuring SARB can continue with its financial stability mandate. And that's the reason for the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Mia, for your response. Are there any other additions from SAB on this matter?
I see
a hand of Michael Manamela. I don't know who he is.
Yes, Chair, apologies.
Is he from SAB?
Michael Manamela is the head of department of our economic staff department.
Okay,
That's and he would like to have input in terms of the type of data that may be required.
No problem. Let me recognize him, Mr. Manamela.
Thank you, Chair. Good to see my colleague from Stats. I used to work at Stats, Chair. So it's good to see my colleague from Stats on the call here. So I just show my face and I think just talk to a couple of points. So I think the issue around data sharing is not a unique situation to our own in South Africa. Regularly at international forums like your UN Special Commission, at the IMF, the OECD, the issue around sharing data is regularly discussed, and I think it's taking cognizance of the fact that there's a lot of risks in the financial systems, and I think it's quite important that you share data so that you can be able to preempt and prepare for those kind of analysis. So I think the issue around sharing data at the communal level. It's something that I think we should see it as it may not be important today, but I think in the future that's going to be what I think we'll all be grappling with. And I think it's important that we have that context as we discuss this matter. Now, the second point that I think has been kind of contributing to the question raised by Honorable Mani is that the one thing that we've been advocating as a special community is that we need to avoid duplication because you don't want a situation whereby status A, Reserve Bank, Department of Planning and Monitoring, we all go to the same respondents and collect the same information. I think part of what we are trying to resolve here is to avoid duplication so that we go to a source once as a community of statisticians and be able to see how best can we then reuse that information. So I think it's important that there's a lot of respondent burden on the respondents and businesses, corporates, households, and I think what you want to do is to really alleviate the burden on respondents where multiple institutions go to the same response. Respondent. And just to give an example, we are currently working with Status A, National Treasury, on collecting information on public entities. And I think the idea is that as the three institutions both having a contribution around publishing government financial statistics, we've realized that we are all collecting information. I think the public of Department of Planning and Monitoring, they also do their collection. And basically, all we're saying is that instead of all of us going to the same respondents, let's create a one source of collection. The project that we're currently working on, and I think that's just kind of shows that the level of cooperation and understanding about reducing the respondent burden is quite important. And I think we are having a pilot around that. The third point, maybe just to make Chair, in conclusion on this matter, is that there are jurisdictions whereby the Reserve Bank is actually a core member of the national fiscal system. So in Portugal, if you look at their legislation, what we are asking for is almost half of what they have got in Portugal. So in Portugal, the Central Bank of Portugal and other entities that are critical to fiscal production are by legislation part of institutions whereby the National Fiscal Office delegate authority for them to be able to play a role in the circle community. So it's not something that I think is unique to what we're asking for. Of course, it's in minority, but I think that's probably, I think, going forward to say if we are going to be able to fulfill our obligation to reporting on granular data around the G20 requirements, but also to make sure that we monitor all the financial risks, this request would really be quite important to be looked in a positive light. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Manamela, for that response to the issues raised. In the manner we have programmed the day, so at this stage, having responded, I would ask that you hold back and listen as we go to the next steps. Honorable Manyi, is that a follow-up before I proceed?
Yes, Chair, just a quick one. The one question that was not answered is whether things like co-funding, I mean, if you're going to be sharing this information and all of that, but the people that are generating are paying, is SAP willing to help to finance some of the operations of this SA if their information they need? Firstly. Secondly, I just want to just check, Chair, whether, I mean, this is now 30 years into democracy. How did SAP do without this kind of arrangement? How did they manage? What has changed? Why all of a sudden this thing, Chairperson? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Manyi. Mr. Manamela and Ms. Mier, your responses.
Thanks, Chair. So let me start. I think the SAP and STEDS, in my understanding, they've got a quite good working relationship. We are currently funding a project with the status A on the residential property index. I wouldn't mention the amount, but I think the quality test can confirm that we do when required assist financially where if required. So I think the issue around whether we should fund it or not, I think that's something that I think is currently happening anyway. So I think that can cover that. What are the second question, Mr. Manyi? I think I missed the second question.
Why now?
Yeah.
So I think if you look at the, if you look at the STEPS Act that was passed in 1999, the FSR was passed in 2017. So surely there's going to be mutual alignment of about what were the needs then and what are the needs now. So I think as Ms. Mier has kind of alluded, we are really trying to say let's align the various legislations, because I think the timing would have been very different, and I think the needs that we have today are very much different from the needs that we had previously. Thanks. Shanice, you can add.
Okay. Ms. Mier, any addition?
No further additions. I think Michael has answered correctly.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, colleagues. You will sit and listen and take notes. We will be inviting you to come back at some point and to the field when you listen to the others. I'm now going to step off this for now from the SAP presentation and then get to the next item in the presentation. Ms. Moy, that will be from STATS SA, am I right?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the second one is the remarks by STATS SA.
That's fine. Thank you. DM and the SG, at this stage, because last week we were with you, you made a full presentation on this matter. Anything that you want to respond to at this stage on what the South African Reserve Bank has put forward and elaborated on?
No. Before the statistician general, let me convey our greetings on the occasion of this meeting to all of you honorable members on the platform and to representatives from the South African Reserve Bank. This is indeed an important occasion in the sense that, as I said in the last week, it is a culmination of a process which commenced in 2014. We are here today and we welcome the comments made by the South African Reserve Bank. And I think before the response by the statistician general, I would like to make the following observation. One, Chair, the work of Statistics South Africa is based on quite a number of approaches and principles. Chief amongst them is our ability to defend methodologies that we use to collect data, to also to disseminate it. Secondly, the work of SA is also premised on the principle of confidentiality. And that is why it is that is executed with ease, because South Africans are in the position to comply with SA because they know that their information will be preserved and that it will not be used by the third party at a granular level. So we welcome the notion that there's a need for a much more intensified approach between the South African Reserve Bank and SA in the work that that both institutions undertake. And however, we must be mindful of the fact that it will prove very difficult in future for SA to share its work if its work is to be shared in granular terms with third parties. So I think these are the observations we would want to make, but let's allow the SC to get into much more granular detail in responding to the submission by the South African Reserve Bank.
Thank you. Thank you, DM. As I invite the SG, I can see where you are. People, the plates and spoons are competing with you. But let me invite the SG.
Chairperson, let me thank and greet you. And indeed, let me greet honorable members and continue to greet our colleagues from the Reserve Bank. Mike Manamela used to work at SA, and I can see now that our relationship continues to improve as it has been like that since time immemorial. Chairperson, we have asked for co-hosting rights, which we have, so Celia will be showing the presentation. We will respond to this in the form of a presentation. And I will take off my camera if you allow, Chair.
That's in order, SG.
Sorry, Chair, am I the only one without audio?
No, you do. I think it's on the side of the SG.
Chair, I was kicked out of the meeting as I was about to present.
No problem. Please come back and start.
We are starting with our presentation in the next slide that amongst other things that we have said we will do, Chair, is to drive legislative reforms, sustain and protect the quality of official statistics and national indicators and drive business transformation. But as regards the amendment, the statistics amendment bill, Chair, in the next slide, one of the things is that we have dealt previously with the background to the amendment bill, the consultations that took place, comparisons of the STATS Act with other domestic laws in relation to data privacy and data access, comparison to the STATS Act with other international laws, study tours, the socioeconomic impact assessment system was undertaken, and the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor advised that the law is consistent with other laws in the country. And this, we kept on going to them as we were consulting cabinet, as we started this process of parliament. The chief, the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor continued to say that we are consistent with other laws. Now, we dealt with key amendments previously, the impact of the revised act to the entire system of national statistics. And indeed, we dealt with submission to parliament. And following this, which we appreciate a lot from the South African Reserve Bank, there are issues that we have had to deal with, particularly. Let us start off by saying that the bill was gazetted as of the 6th of October 2023, and written comments were received from the South African Reserve Bank that they were in the main about the South African Reserve Bank having access to enterprise-level data at a more granular level from organs of state such as STATSA. And of course, the current practice as prescribed in the STATS Act is that the South African Reserve Bank or any other entity cannot have access to data at a level that will compromise confidentiality. And indeed, the South African Reserve Bank is therefore asking, amongst others, for Section 17 of the STATS Act, which deals with confidentiality, to be tweaked or to allow the disclosure of information to authorized persons within the South African Reserve Bank, subject to the direction or the directive of the Statistician General. Now, when we look at the next slide, Chair, we are saying that let's start with Section 17, the inclusion of a clause for data access by the South African Reserve Bank in the amendment bill will compromise the following clause. One, Section 17 says, despite any other law, no return or other information collected by Statistics South Africa for the purposes of official and other statistics that relates to one, individuals, households, organs of the state, business, and any other organization, and in reference to subsection 2 and 3, may be disclosed to any person. And I'll talk about subsection 3, which is subject to this matter, which is in the following slide. In the following slide, we are saying that subsection 3 talks to having to obtain a written consent from the person or the business or their representative where information was collected for the information to be disclosed. Chairperson, I must admit that subsection 3 says that the Statistician General may, for purposes of statistics, disclose to other organs of the state information and data gathered in the course of joint collections undertaken, provided the name, the address, and any other means by which the respondent may be identified, and this includes enterprises, is deleted. And in this regard, we do understand that Section 28 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act that our colleagues from the Reserve Bank are referring to, does assist them with dealing with activities of financial stability, but in the main, assisting them in performing their functions. And in this regard, we are saying that amongst other things, and insertion in Section 20A in the Act, which allows for regulations to be made regarding protocols and guidelines on data access and confidentiality, as contemplated in Section 14.18 of Section 14, Subsection 18. We are saying that guidelines and protocols are very critical, and this one we are actually we have inserted that one, but particularly in relation to the work that the South African Reserve Bank does, we have a memorandum of understanding that would work through such protocols and guidelines in terms of access of data in such a way that would allow us to uphold confidentiality. I will come to that memorandum of understanding, Chair. But regardless of the fact that on this public comment, it's only the South African Reserve Bank that has come through, in future, any other organ of state or any other institution, including government departments, may come and say that they require access to information. And the moment status say is seen to be receiving information, and they are already there, they may not have commented here and now, but they will come, and they have always been coming. SARS being one of them, the Department of Social Development being other, Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation being another agency, they or department will come in the future. And the moment status say is seen to be receiving information and be sharing it at granular level with other institutions, it will compromise confidentiality and in turn create resistance. There was a question that was asked by Honorable Mani in relation to work that we can work together with the South African Reserve Bank for co-funding. Indeed, we have work that we are doing together. But not only that, it's not with the South African Reserve Bank. We also have other government departments and other organs of state that approach us for user-paid surveys or joint work. But still, when we share information, we make sure that issues of the name, address, and any other means by which the respondent may be identified are deleted. And we would like to ensure that in us being status A, being not only known, but also being perceived at all times, that we are upholding confidentiality. We use the protocols and guidelines. And in this regard, the memorandum of understanding that we have signed with the South African Reserve Bank in 2020, continue to put it in force, so that we can, it can allow us for data sharing while we leave no perceptions whatsoever out there that we may be sharing information from respondents with other organs of the state. Chairperson, having said so, I need to say that the next slide says Ndihela Kwala, which means that I'm finishing here. And I would have loved to explain it, Chairperson. And I know you love it when I explain it all the time. But for purposes of...
You have 2 minutes to explain it. You have 2 minutes
Chairperson,
to explain it. It gets explained once in a meeting. That's fine.
I know you have never missed, and people love me explaining this slide all the time, Chair. When I was young, growing up in the village, we used to write letters for our mothers to our fathers in migrant centers who were migrant workers. And in the process, mothers and fathers could not finish a letter with sweet words like, I love you or I miss you, my husband. They could, because children were their scribes, mothers and fathers could not be seen or be heard to be writing such words through their children. So they had to finish amongst the Watsonga speaking people a standard way of finishing a letter was that Ndihela Kwala. In isiXhosa, they would say Ndiqeda khona apha ngumkhulu umbulelo. In Setswana, kifetsa khona fa. In Sepedi, kifetsa khona mo. In Sesotho sa Borwa ka ditumediso na wa tsena. In isiNdebele, they would say ngiyathokoza. And in isiZulu, they would say amaningang nawo. Whereas in English and Afrikaans, they would always say I miss you at Lief Ferio. Chairperson, I must admit that never and never again Washu Mandela, and especially on this day, should we allow sections of our society not to be allowed space in development because we are in charge. And even on this case between us and the Reserve Bank, while we uphold confidentiality, we will make sure that we execute our mandate through the memorandum of understanding on the protocols that we put in place. Chairperson, the next slide is blank. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, SP, and the DM for the response on the staff SA, so that we procedural and consistent. I'm going to ask any members who have got the clarity, any clarity or question. I know you would have listened to this even last Friday from Steph SA. I want to start with you if there's any clarity on your side on what the SG and the DMS has put forward. Is that opportunity, Honorable Mani?
Thank you, Chair. No, for me, it's not a clarity, Chair, if you may indulge. I just want to say the SG has confirmed my butterflies. I think I feel validated because, Chairperson, this is the claim to fame by Stats SA is that this information is only for this what we're collecting it for. Now, it means that for this background arrangement to be transparent, Stats SA must also put as part of its repertoire. It must also say that please be mindful that as we do this, we are also going to share. They will have an obligation for me, to me as a respondent, to say to me, Manyi, just be aware, Chief, that as we take this information from you, we must share it with SARB. And before we know, as he's saying, SARB will also be in the queue. And I think this is unworkable, Chair. That's why I think it has not been happening until now. So I think I'm covered by the explanation by the Statistician General. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mani. That comment is allowed because it assists in deliberations. Thank you, no other member, for any clarities or questions. We will proceed. I have not forgotten you, South African Reserve Bank. I just wanted maybe I'll call you in at this stage so that I can invite to the information regulator and then you can respond to both. Is that in order with you? Thank you. Let's now proceed to the next presentation. Welcome, Mr. Masisi, from the Information Regulator. You've been listening from the chair opening the meeting and everybody else that would have spoken on the matter at hand. We agreed last Friday that it would be good to also bring in the other organ of the state in the information regulator who has a particular responsibility on the matters that we're dealing with as part of this amendment of the SSA. And we then agreed that it's proper that we invite information regulator to come and make our own inputs, would have shared what we have. And so you are in a very good position having listened to in a meeting live from all the other players, but we want you to assist us from the vantage point of information regulator. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to Honorable members, the colleagues from StatSA as well as the Reserve Bank. Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson, for inviting the information regulator. Obviously, in a short space of time, we received the invitation and then we had to prepare this presentation last night. I'm not sure if the Honorable Chairperson and members have received the presentation, but I hope it is visible on the screen.
It is visible on the screen.
Thank you so much, Chair. Honorable Chair, you remember, Chair, that the information regulator performed dual mandates in terms of the promotion of access to information, which emanate from our constitution, the right of access to information, as well as the right to protection of personal information, which also emanate from the constitution, which obviously is the right to privacy. So the issue of disclosure of information, Chair, will emanate from our constitution, section 32 of the constitution, which provide that everyone has the right of access to any information held by the state. And section 32 of the constitution in turn provides for the enactment of the national legislation, which legislation, Honorable Chair and members, happened to be the promotion of access to information, which was the legislation enacted in accordance with the constitution. So in the form of providing a background information, we managed to go through the section that intended to be amended of the Statistics Act, which is section 17, Chair. I'm not going to repeat what the section says, as the Statistic General has already highlighted what the section provides. But the main section that we want to focus our presentation, our assistant to Parliament, is section 17.2 of the State Act, which provides the Statistician General with a discretion to disclose information collected for official and other statistics. And then section 17.3a of the State Act also provides for the disclosure of information or data gathered to another organ of state for that statistical purposes, on condition, Honorable Chair and members, that the name, address, and other means by which the respondent may be identified is deleted. However, such information under section 17.3 can only be disclosed to an organ of state involved in a joint collection. It means SAB and SA should have been involved in that collection, and therefore the Statistic General can actually disclose under section 17.3a. You'll see, Chair, Honorable Chair, later on when I present under POPIA and PIE, especially in POPIA, the protection of personal information, how this section is linked to the POPIA, in other words, compliance with POPIA. Obviously, the Portfolio Committee is in the process of amending the State Act through the Amendment Bill, which was advertised for public comment, and SAB has made that submission to the Portfolio Committee, requesting Parliament to insert a new clause in the Amendment Bill in terms of which Section 17 of the State Act should be amended to include subsection that allow for the disclosure of certain information to SAB. SAB submitted that it may from time to time require access to the records held by StatSA in order to fulfill its legislative mandate of monitoring and keep under review and mitigating risk to financial stability. So if we were to come now, Honorable Chair and members, to the promotion of access to information, which is the legislation emanating from our constitution that provide for the right of access to information. Firstly, I want to refer the Honorable Chair and members to Section 5 of the promotion of access to information, which is PAIA, which provides that the Act applies to the exclusion of any legislation that prohibits or restricts the disclosure of records of a public or private body, and is materially inconsistent with the object and specific provision of the Act. Obviously, the object is to encourage access to information by all means to assist the public to be able to exercise other rights. SAB is established in terms of Section 22-23 of the Constitution, and the StatSA is also a national department, which means that SAB and StatSA are public bodies in terms of PAIA. And if you look at Section 11A of PAIA, it provides that a requester must be given access to records of a public body if that requester complies with all procedural requirements and access to that record is not refused in terms of any grounds for refusal as contemplated in PAIA. And another issue that we thought we should highlight, Honorable Chair, is that our constitution provides that everyone has the right of access to any information held by the state. and PAIA was enacted to give effect to that right. However, a public body such as SAB is not classified as a requester under PAIA for the purpose of accessing the records held by another public body such as State SA. This means, Honorable Chair and members, that SAB cannot use PAIA to request access to the records held by State SA. And I think that's the reason why they've got the memorandum of agreement, of understanding that they've entered into. Honorable Chair, although SAB cannot use PAIA to access the records held by State SA under PAIA, PAIA does provide, and this will assist the portfolio committee when if they decide to make an amendment, it will assist them because the PAIA provides that if a person requires access to a records of public body containing information that falls under any of the grounds of refusal, such as confidential information of a third party, every part of the record which does not contain confidential information and that can be reasonably be severed from any part that contains confidential information must be disclosed. In other words, if you've got a document that contains personal information and that personal information can be severed from the document, in other words, you can remove the confidential part of the information in the document, that can be must be removed and the rest of the document must therefore be disclosed. You see, this is in line with the Section 17 that we have read, as well as the next provision of POPIA that we're going to highlight under the protection of personal information. Firstly, we want to alert that the POPIA, which is the protection of personal information, applies to the exclusion of any provision of any legislation that regulate the processing of personal information that is materially inconsistent with other or specific provision of the Act. In other words, there can be any other legislation that provides for the processing of personal information, but if that legislation is consistent with the object of POPIA, then POPIA takes precedence. Section 3, subsection 3B of POPIA provides that this act, which is POPIA, must be interpreted in a manner that does not prevent any public body from exercising and performing its powers, duties, and function in terms of the law. As far as such powers, duties, and function relate to the processing of personal information, and such processing is in accordance with the act. So in other words, there can be the public body must be allowed to still render their services, but they must do so in line with the POPIA. In other words, they should be able to protect the personal information that they process. So POPIA does provide, Honorable Chair and members, for the 8 conditions for lawful processing of personal information. These are the conditions that regulate, Honorable Chair and members, the manner in which personal information must be processed by all public and private bodies. So personal information is defined to mean information relating to identifiable living natural person. So it relates only to a person who is still alive. And where it is applicable, an identifiable juristic person, which means a company that would not have been liquidated or deregistered. So it must be that. And this means that de-identified personal information is not a personal information under POPIA. So if you de-identify those personal information, therefore it cannot be regarded as personal information. If we were to go into, I've highlighted the 2 conditions that are critical for purpose of considering the proposed amendments. The first one is condition number 4, which provides for further processing of personal information of data subject to be compatible with the purpose of collection. And in this regard, Honorable Chair members, I refer to Section 15(3) sub E of POPIA, which provide that further processing of personal information is not incompatible. In other words, it's compatible with the purpose of collection if the information is used for historical, statistical, or research purposes. And the responsible party ensures that the further processing is carried out solely for such purposes and will not be published in an identifiable form. In other words, it will have to be de-identified certain personal information for further processing. And then we now refer to section condition number 6, which provides for notification to data subject when collecting personal information. In other words, when Statistics SA collects personal information, the condition 6 provides that they must inform the data subject of that collection. But section 18(1)(h), Roman figure 1 of POPIA, provides amongst others that if personal information is collected The responsible party, which is State SA, must take reasonable practical steps to ensure that the data subject is aware of the recipient or category of recipient of the information. So there's an obligation of State SA to inform those people, data subject, that the information that has been collected will be then transferred or given, disclosed to another person. And you have to inform them if you are going to do that. But however, subsection 18.4F of POPIA provides that it is not necessary for the responsible party to notify the data subject about the recipient or category of the recipient of the information if the information will not be used in a form which the data subject may be identified. In other words, if the information will be de-identified. Section 17 of State SA does talk about the issue of de-identification. Or if the information will be used for historical statistics and research purposes. We are not aware of the regulator at this stage as how the information that they receive, they use it for, but we assume that it will be used to assist the Reserve Bank to perform its mandate as they want to do it. But that's what the legislation provides now. So in conclusion, Honorable Chairperson and members, Section 17 of STATS Act seems to have been intended to protect the confidentiality of information or statistics that relates to the individual juristic person. In this regard, it relates to mainly personal information. And personal information relating to an individual or juristic person can be disclosed in terms of Section 17.2 and 17.3A of State SA. If, one, such information is de-identified to such an extent that it cannot be used or manipulated by a reasonable foreseeable method to identify the data subject, or if such information can be linked by a reasonable foreseeable method to other information that identify the data subject. So that's the first condition that under which the information can be disclosed by State SA to the Reserve Bank. The second condition is that if the processing is for historical statistics research purposes and the responsible party ensure that the further processing is carried out solely for the purposes, for such purposes, and it will not be published in an identifiable form. This also still talks to the same provision of Section 17, Honorable Chair and members, that dictate about the de-identification of personal information. As a result, the Section 17.2 and 17.3E to 17.3G of State Act provide for the circumstances under which certain information may be disclosed, but it does not provide for the process on how another organ of state can request access to information. You remember earlier, Honorable Chair and members, we indicated that PAYA is not applicable. If PAYA was applicable, they could use the PAYA process to request or the access to information. Now that PAYA is not applicable, the State Act does provide that the Statistician General can actually disclose information, but it does not provide. We do not pick up the process under which a person can request access. But it does provide a discretion to the SG to be able to disclose such an information. Accordingly, Parliament is not prevented from promulgating any legislation that regulates the processing of personal information or disclosure of certain records, as long as such legislation must be consistent with the object or specific provision of POPIA. We therefore propose, Honorable Chair and members, that any proposal for the disclosure of personal information of individuals or businesses to the authorized official of SEP must be for the purpose of performing SEP mandate only and subject to the de-identification of certain personal information by which the respondents may be identified. We want to add as well, Honorable Chair, that the security measures is very critical. We have not seen the MOU between SAB and State SA, but we want to recommend that if there will be any amendment, such amendment should be subject to SAB having security measures to ensure that the information that is disclosed to them should not be accessed by any unauthorized person. So there must be sufficient security measures, and that should be guaranteed to the responsible party, because State SA, Honorable Chair members, take accountability for any information they have collected and disclosed to the other party. They may remain responsible in under POPIA for that personal information and not SAB. And therefore, it's important that the security measures become key in any legislation or any agreement that has been provided. I'll end here, Honorable Chairperson, and I will assist in providing any clarity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nemasisi, for your elaborate explanation from the information regulator. Honorable members, you've heard. I want to invite you for any clarity or question or a brief comment on what you've heard from Mr. Nemasisi of the information regulator, and thereafter I will invite Saab to make any responses. Honorable Manyi. Sorry, you are breaking up. Just reposition yourself.
Proceed
now, because I want you to hear so that you don't break up.
Okay, is it better now, Chair?
That's fine now.
Yeah, I was in the old assembly. Yeah, I just walked out of the NCOP. Yeah. Chairperson, no, I think the submission by the regulator is consistent with the nervousness of the SG, which I also confirmed, as it were, Chairperson. The level of granularity that the sub is requiring is just too uncomfortable, even for me sitting where I'm sitting. I'm quite happy to cooperate as a South African citizen with SARS. It SARS comes directly to me and say, Mr. Enterprise, so-and-so, give me this and that. I mean, everybody is obliged to do that. So really, I think we can just say to SARS that we note your request, but no thanks. If you want this information, go get it yourself. I think this is introducing complexities, Chairperson. I think as a society, the key thing that we should be doing is to reduce complexities. What SAB is asking for is actually an increase in complexity. It's going to make the work of SAB extremely difficult because, as I said, immediately SAB agrees to this. They immediately have an obligation to use it as part of their PR machinery to say, please be aware that information that we collect here, we're also going to share with this, with SAB at a granular level that SAB is requiring this information. So, Chairperson, I think in closing, I think this input, and I don't even think that Parliament should use its power to increase complexities as well, because what you want, you don't want to create vulnerabilities. And we're not trying to make anybody evade anything. We're simply saying, if SAB wants information, SAB must go and get that information, and nobody must deny SAB that information. But SAB must not use this mechanism to get the information that they want. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Manyi. Colleagues, let me now invite the South African Reserve Bank. I have made you listen to both SA and Information Regulator, the SG, and Mr. Nemasisi. So let me now invite both Ms. Mier and Mr. Manamela for your take on what you heard, whatever clarities you need to provide both to the two institutions or to the members. I don't know which one starts between the two of you.
I can start if you allow me.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Manamela.
Thanks, Chair. So, I mean, I'm not a legal guru, so I think my colleague from legal will kind of touch on the legal aspect. But I mean, I think the proposal shared, it's very clear that we are making a proposal to, or maybe let me step back and start at the beginning. So I think the one thing that we are asking, and I think probably asking to issue around whether is this a backdoor arrangement or not, is that the fact that this is going to be in the bill or in the act, it shows that we want the issue to be transparent. So I don't think anybody's going to hide anything or come through it. But I think the fact that we are saying, let it be something that you know, as all South Africans can be aware of, I think for me it's about saying, this is a process that ensures that there's transparency around what the protocols would be. And of course there will be protocols around I think there was issue around protocols around, you know, confidentiality, ensuring that the security and all that. And I think those are things that in the end have to happen. And the second part is that the proposal also says that in the end it's still the SG's discretion in his judgment to say, is the information that is being requested you know, going to address what the request would be. So I don't think it's giving any blanket access to the Reserve Bank on any information, because I think the SG will still make an assessment with his team to say, is this request rational about what it's all about? And there'll really be, you know, irregular access or request for you know, UN record data. I think the access, the request is really about, you know, having information that is unpublished, but that can inform the work of the Reserve Bank. So I don't think there's any intention to access any information that is confidential and make it public. In the work that we do, we don't make any publication about any individual data of individuals or of enterprises. So there's no intention at all to publish information on individual businesses. And I agree with the comments about that data can be anonymized. I think we should also be kind of cautious or say if there are concerns, of course, then I think we as institutions, we should look at, you know, how best we ensure that data can be anonymized to avoid any concerns. But as I said, the proposal is about being transparent to all the South African citizens, and I think that will probably for me provide more confidence in the system than if someone was to hear that something is done behind the back and service code data. Now, the other comment to make is that, I mean, I think I made a point earlier on, as a statistical community, and I think the colleague from STATS can confirm this, whether in this discussion or not, the fact of the matter is that respondents are fatigued because we go to them all the time. And I think that's why they talk about, you know, big data, admin data, so that one can minimize, you know, the contact that you've got with business, because I think they all have their own overheads, and I think they would prefer one contact, you know, with government or with public institutions, and that information must be reused. And I also made an example that we are now working with the Treasury and STATS to collect information on public entities, so that the three institutions can reuse that information. We can't go out and duplicate efforts. I think one is a waste of resources. But also I think it's going to cause fatigue with respondents. And I think the committee must kind of balance in their deliberations, balance those kind of considerations. The other thing is that not all, and I mean, I guess this is where my legal practitioners must help, but I think in my view, we can equate all departments and state organs with the function of the Reserve Bank. I think as I alluded earlier on about the mandate of the bank in terms of what its role is to maintain financial stability and price stability. And of course, as some departments in the bank that must provide information that must inform that mandate, that's our primary mandate. Our department as they do statistics in one form or the other, it's more or less a secondary mandate. For us, that's a primary mandate. And I think, like I said earlier on, in Portugal, the central bank it's got a delegation from the National Central Office, and it's part of the NSS. And I think that there's an understanding that it must be treated as such. And not all other departments are part of that arrangement. And I think that's something I think people can look into. The last point that I want to make maybe before I give to my colleagues to also add is that I think the biggest concern or part of the concern is that we currently as I already said, we've got an MOU that was signed in 2020. The intent of the MOU is that we should develop what you call data sharing protocols. Those protocols are still under development. But I think the key question that we should ask ourselves is that what is it in the protocols that will supersede what is in the Act or in the bill? So although I think both constitutions have a good intention about sharing data in what we are currently developing, there is a platform that STATS has prepared that can be discussed in STATS, which will be shared with the bank later. But I think the principle is that if there's no provision in the Act, you know, wouldn't we be constrained by the fact that there's no provision in the Act? So for me, the proposal still provides the SG with the discretion, and as such, I think as the information regulator has kind of alluded as well, is that there has to be proper regulations around if there's any data exchange, how should it be done, you know, and how to ensure that there's confidence in the system, and I'm sure those things can be worked out by the institution. So I think I'll stop there and ask my colleagues to add if they've got anything to add. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Manamela. Just before I go to Ms. Mier and any other person from SAB that might want to add, I just want to, so that as they respond, and you might have to come back, the question that is critical for me as a chair to all of you from SAB is, having listened to the discussion so far from State SA and Information Regulator, are you standing on the submission you made, or are you persuaded otherwise? So it's important that I just get some clarity on that, or do you think that you still need more clarity and so on? Ms. Mier?
Thank you, Chair, for clarifying that. So I think in terms of our presentation and our proposal, we are simply asking for an alignment of the two pieces of legislation. So when it is alluded or when Mr. Mani, for example, says it's a backdoor, our stance is still
Okay, for now, before you proceed, I would want us to leave the backdoor because it might just contaminate good discourse and discussion. He didn't come back on that issue. Maybe that is an example. I don't want all of you to hold him on the backdoor issue.
Thank you, Chair. So thanks for that guidance. So from our perspective, we are saying that what we want is entrenched in primary law in terms of the obligation of organs of state to provide to the SAB information it requires for the purpose of financial stability. I was very pleased with Mr. Nemesisi's presentation, especially with regard to personal information, because this is what we are all concerned about. We want to balance the intrusion of personal information with the function or the exercise of a public function by an institution such as the SAB. So when he referred to Section 3.3 of the Papaya Act, which said the Papaya Act must be interpreted in a manner that does not prevent any public or private body from exercising or performing its powers, duties, and functions in terms of the law, as far as such powers, duties, and functions relate to the processing of personal information, and such processing is in accordance with this Act or any other legislation, as referred to in subsection 2 that regulates the processing of personal information. And when you look at the request from SAB in terms of alignment, again, we are saying that this is in terms of enabling us to exercise our public function in protecting financial stability. The Mr. Nemesisi went on to say, and it was very appropriate that he referred to clauses in Popaya regarding further processing, and further processing needs to be compatible with the purpose of collection. So yes, indeed, the information may be collected by Stats SA, but SAB requires it for the purpose of financial stability. And then he went on to say that if it's used for historical, statistical, research purposes, not published in an identifiable form, and for me, this is key, because we may request granular data for the purpose of for the purpose of statistics that we require for determining how to protect and maintain financial stability. So that data, when it's published, will not be in an identifiable form. However, we do require the granular data for the purpose of our statistics to protect financial stability. And we will comply with whatever is required, including the security and organizational measures addressed by Mr. Nemesisi, which are requirements in terms of the Popaya Act. What we need to make sure is that we don't create duplication of requirements where we require this information, because we want things to be made simpler and efficient to enable our institutions to carry out our mandate and function. And as Mr. Manamela also said, my colleague said, that we, although there are protocols, the protocols go far, but do they go far enough? We need to ensure that they do not supersede the primary law, which may then inhibit us from performing our functions. And hence our request is really to ensure that the clause 1A in particular aligns with section 28 of FSRA. And that's the crux of the proposal by SAB. Thank you, Chair.
Is there anybody else from anybody else from SAB that wants to make a contribution? None. We'll quickly go to the SG Information Regulator, and then I'll invite members for the roundup of this. SG?
Chair, I would like to invite Yandiswa Mpecheni Murudu to talk to the sections. There are actually about four sections that would allow us to share the information with the South African Reserve Bank without mentioning them by name. And then once she has dealt with that, I will comment right after her. Yandi?
Okay, that's in order.
Thank you, Chief. Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee, Reserve Bank, and the issue has already presented on 17-2 as a way of getting this information. I won't repeat what you said. And you also talked to 17-3. I won't repeat what you said about sharing of information and all of that. But there is another section where we are allowed to share this information. And it is a new insertion under Section 7, which says the SG may, for research purposes, give data access to entities of the NSS. And the Reserve Bank is also one entity of the NSS. And we have 20A that the SG talked to, where we go and we do regulations on data access. So in these four areas, that's how the sub can access this information without being mentioned by name in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mpecheni. So as you come in, SG, so that you speak on the, so because the question to you then is, from what Ms. Mpecheni was saying and what you'd have said before, an information regulator, that that there would be no trade smash. South African Reserve Bank will still meet the purpose and achieve what they wanted to achieve under the current regime in the manner that you operate, without us having to invoke any serious amendments that are going to be in conflict with the relevant legislation that we have, that can still be done, and therefore nothing is hindered from South African Reserve Bank with the kind of operations that you have, and including the four areas as just explained. Am I right? Please come on.
Certainly, Chair. Number one is that there is, in terms of organs of state or members of the National System of Statistics or any other agency that we work with, there is no specific agency that stands out, Chairperson. So in the eyes of the State Act, everybody is equal. We can't say the South African Reserve Bank is much more superior to SARS or any other government department. Even in the way we collect data, in the way we disseminate, I mean, a good example, Chase, even the president, when we collect information about the president of the country, we collect information from the president as an individual, not as the president. So in the eyes of the State Act, there is no agency that should claim any space. Having said so, these four sections that have been put in place, Section 7, which is a new addition we are making that will make information available for research purposes, as well as Section 17.2, 17.3, and Section 28, should suffice for the South African Reserve Bank or any other organ of state without having to mention them by name. Because in a law, what you need, Chairperson, is not, you want a law that can stand the test of time, that you don't have to amend it every now and then there's a new player or there's a new law that requires a new player to come to say, but you have mentioned the Reserve Bank by name. Now, as SARS, we want this information, or as this department, we want this information. You have to make sure that it stands the test of time. And these four clauses will allow us to share information, of course, upholding confidentiality with the South African Reserve Bank or any organ of the state, even if there are changes in the laws in the next few years. We will still be consistent. So that is number one. Number two is that the protocols in the form of a memorandum of understanding, where they are not strong, as the South African Reserve Bank indicates, we should be able to strengthen them to harvest or ride on the back of these four clauses to make sure that we don't impede on the work of the South African Reserve Bank. So we are of the view, Chair, that from SARS, that with these four clauses, we will not impede on the work of the South African Reserve Bank. And indeed, we will uphold confidentiality, because it's not what is being in the law. It's also the perceptions in the eyes of the public, as well as perceptions in the eyes of business. Of how fast SARS can go in terms of handling the data that they give to us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, SG. Mr. Nemasisi.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson and members. Honorable Chair, we do not have further submissions. Suffice to say, the legislation does provide for the disclosure as it is. It may not be sufficient, but we have noted that the POPIA does allow for an agreement between entities to share information, but there are measures that need to be put in place where information collected by one entity is shared with the other entity. And perhaps if there's a challenge to amend legislation, we do not want to comment on whether legislation is amended or not, but if there's a challenge to amend legislation, perhaps what the State SA and Reserve Bank can look at is strengthen their memorandum to ensure that where they decided to share personal information, there must be an element of de-identification. They must put measures in place to ensure that there is sufficient security measures put in place to ensure that such personal information, once it's disclosed from State SA to SUB, SUB has got obligation to protect that information. We have seen, Honorable Chairperson and members, the increased number of security compromises in South Africa. And as we discuss here in Parliament, as well as between the two entities, we need to emphasize the issue of putting sufficient security measures in place to ensure that where personal information is collected and is being processed by another entity which regulate, perform its mandate to assist, obviously, all of us, we still have an obligation to ensure that those information are protected. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Namasisi of the Information Regulator. Before I go to members, any quick pick, Ms. Mie and Mr. Manamela?
Thank you, Chair. So I have heard the presentations and the comments, and I've heard the SG's a view in relation to SAB not being named specially with regard to Section 17. So what I'm suggesting as a way forward is if SAB drops their proposal on Section 17, the proposed amendments on Section 17, however, then what we would need to have in place going forward is that our amendment in Clause 1, capital A, be retained. Because that simply doesn't name us under your Section 17 provisions, but it recognizes Section 28A and B of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, which is the mandate of the SAB to protect financial stability. So I would be comfortable with dropping the Section 17 if it helps this committee, if it helps the SG, and we can just go with the amendment to Clause 1A and the definition, obviously, of the Financial Sector Regulation Act as well needing to be included, just to tie up Clause 1A and us introducing the complete legislation, meaning the Financial Sector Regulation Act number 9 of 2017. So that's my proposal. As a result of the discussions that have come through. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Mier. I was going to go to the members, but I can quickly just check with the SG, because at the end, we're going to have deliberations. We're listening to all of you. We're going to take a decision on everything else you have said. So, SG, comment on that. Last comment from Ms. Mier.
Chair.
Go ahead.
To comment on the Chair, I would like to allow Ms. Yandi Mbecheni to comment. Yandi.
Okay. Okay, Mbecheni.
Yes, Chair, thank you, Chair. We welcome the comment from Ms. Mier, but in the inclusion on 1A of the act that they want us to include, it's still going to be a problem for us because we could still be approached by other entities to put that as if it's more important. Because that section that she's talking to, it says, say for the Constitution, the States Act will prevail on matter statistics. Now they are asking that we add the clause for their act. And I don't think so it's going to work. I think we can still share this data in the ways that we have explained. And when Mike talked to unpublished data, we are already working on protocols so that we can share this unpublished data. We don't really have to mention this act by name. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Becheni. Members, any comment, Honorable Manyi, questions and clarities, having listened to all three of the organs of state, this is the only committee and this is how we're supposed to do our work, as we have an overarching coordination. So this should not be a once-off where all three different entities are called by this committee to speak to us. Honorable Manyi.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know. Is it clear this time? Can you hear me loud and clear?
It's clear.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. No, firstly, I want to just thank everyone. Also, Chair, at 10 o'clock, as you know, there's plenary. This is my Lakwala submission. yeah. No, Chairperson, I actually think the Reserve Bank, when they were quoting Mr. Nemasisi, I think he was quoted, for lack of a better word, opportunistically and expediently in the manner that, because I think that same quotation that was used by the Reserve Bank for their own purposes applies even more to the agent whose primary function is to do, who is to execute their mandate. It cannot be that SARS wants to execute its mandate and put everybody else, all other agencies, under pressure because they have to do what they need to do. When, in fact, SARS is not prevented from getting this information itself directly. I mean, for SARS to come to State SA and say, listen here, in terms of my duty and function, I have to do this, the Constitution wants me to do this, da-da-da-da, and all of that. I mean, what's going to do with State SA? State SA says, well, we can help you, but to this extent, if we want the help to the kind of granularity that you need, it compromises State SA's primary function of collecting information in a manner that is non-threatening to people. It also, it compromises the pride position of State SA to say they're an independent organization and all of that. It just makes State SA some kind of an intelligence agent of the rest of the other government of other state institutions. Chair, I must put my Lakwala's point and say that I am flatly opposed to the submission by SAP. They must get information as per what has been described. There should be no special arrangement. There should be no tweaking of anything to allow anything else, Chairperson, because I am jealously guarding the credibility of State SA, Chairperson. I mean, especially, Chairperson, let me introduce this as just to show, as a member of society, that we have rent manipulation here at the hands of the Reserve Bank. As to where was the Reserve Bank and where was its rent manipulation? So to subject even more people to institutions whose primary mandate is to protect the currency gets manipulated, and then under their nose, and all of that, and then they go to some innocent department like State SA, and they want their hand in there. This will contaminate the credibility of State SA. So, Chair, I close here by saying I don't think it's a good proposal. I think we have heard what they wanted to say. Thank you very much. Move next door. You want to do your work? Do it yourself, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Manyi. Honorable Piri.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning to your good self. Good morning, colleagues. And everybody in the platform. Chair, I don't think I have much, but to me, I just want to appreciate the opportunity and the deliberations made in this meeting. And I think we've done justice in concern with the proposal of with the Reserve Bank, I think there was a proper explanation from StatsSA, and let them allow StatsSA to proceed with the clause that they've just proposed to amend. And they must not worry if there's something, any other thing that we are not getting or we are not understanding, Chair. But my understanding is that, yes, the SG will give them information when they require it. And depending on how the SG wants to give that information, it also... And currently, when I listen to the SG, they've been giving them information. There's nothing that they've raised to say we requested an information and we're not given. Based on that, we are saying this proposal. But I think it's fair enough, as I want to agree with Honorable Mani, that let us allow the amendment as proposed by the SG and his team. Then we end it. I want to agree with Honorable Mani that proceed. And allow an amend as it is. Unfortunately, we can't allow an entity to be singled out, an entity to be mentioned in a clause, and other entities are not mentioned. We are opening a can of worms that will never deal with it. Thanks, Chair. I think my comment was just to say I've been listening to deliberations, and I believe they were fair enough, and we have a record that shows that you have been fair enough to allow these deliberations. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Phiri. I see the hand of Mr. Manamela. I will give you. You were looking for the head of legal. I don't know if you brought somebody from legal on your team. Might be important to get that person to respond, as I give to you before I do the summary. Mr. Manamela.
Thank you, Chair. I think just the last point from me. I think we've taken note of all the comments and inputs. I think for me, the point that I just want the committee to reflect on is, I think the point that we've been making to say, in our view, there is misalignment between the proposed bill and what we've got in the financial sector regulation, and in relation to the organs of state being obliged to assist the bank for its mandate. And I think the SG1 in his submission did say that there was a consultation with the state attorneys and I guess a number of legal gurus. But I think what I think the committee must be able to reflect on is what we've brought forth. They must be comfortable with the fact that, is there alignment or misalignment? And I think if we can be able to, I think, bridge that hurdle, then I think whatever decision that gets made, I think it must satisfy that, is there currently a misalignment between the two? And if there is, I guess we need to get a legal view on that, so that at least that matter is settled. And whatever decision that is taken, at least based on a legal basis. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Manamela. The point is taken. I think if there's no other comments or clarity at this stage, I want us to step off this in saying, colleagues, that I think we appreciate, we welcome all of your presentations and contributions as we prepare to deliberate as members. I think quite elaborate responses and presentation from all three of you, SARB, StatsSA, and Information Regulator. I certainly think that members are well equipped to proceed with the amendments in a manner that is going to be consistent with our constitution and legislation that we have. That's very key, so that we do nothing that is in conflict, that undermines that, that creates and opens up more loopholes. That's the first point. But that secondly, we appreciate and we embrace the importance of, as we amend this bill, that it must enable all the organs of state and institutions, sub included, to do their work properly, to fulfill their own different mandates, that there must be no, as there is no intention of the bill to inhibit any of those mandates. So we proceed in a manner that takes that into account. Mr. Nemasisi have made a couple of points amongst them that certain things would not be matters that go into acts. As you made the point that the bill we're making, which would be an act, is supposed to be a live and evolving act, but it can't be confined to particular institutions and spaces. And so the point made by Mr. Nemasisi about, and also raised by Ms. Mpecheni, which relates to you being able to achieve what you want to achieve through creating a better relationship and MOUs, including the service level agreement issues that would assist in the operations without tinkering and changing. I think the key issue of a de-identified information is very key in this regard. And so I think we will take all of those into account as we get into, I take the last point also making, which you have made consistently, that part of the things that as a committee we're mindful for. I mean, that's a mandate of this committee. That's our major focus, not only on this issue. We are a planning, monitoring and evaluation committee, a new committee, less than even 6 months, which is there to anchor and ensure that there is overriding coordination in the whole of government, national departments, provinces, municipalities, all institutions. That's the committee that we is responsible to ensure that such things happen. So your point about alignment is in our core business as the committee. When we make assessments, when we call people to their annual report in their strat plan and annual performance plan, our interest is whether there's coordination and alignment. So we would not miss that. We'd have to take that into cognizance. But I would have asked you whether, having listened to this, whether you still stand on the submission. I think Ms. Mie would have indicated that you would accept certain things, but wanted to smuggle another point. Perhaps I can just ask all of you that today's discussion and the fact that you came here with a particular presentation. In my school year of being part of the institution and organization that I'm part of, there were two things I was taught in any situation. It's you listen, you persuade, or you become persuaded. And so the fact that there would have been that initial presentation you made, it should not be difficult to engage with what was thrown here, having listened to it and you try to persuade. I think you should also be open to persuasion, as long as the issues that have been put here have been clearly elaborated to not hinder your work. So really, I want to appreciate that, colleagues. It's for us, it's now 10 o'clock. We're going to take a 15 minutes break, and then when we come back, we're going to hear from Legal Services of Parliament. After that, it's going to be the build of the motion, affect the deliberations, and then desire build of the motion. So we're going to follow those. We have noted for apology SG by that time, which was indicated. But we're here. We'll come back after the break. So we'll take a break and come back at 10:15. Thank you. Welcome back, honorable members. It's now quarter past, as we agreed, we'll come back quarter past 10 and restart and continue with the next presentations. And that being the presentation from Parliamentary Legal Services. The presentation would have been sent to all of us to read. And I'm going to ask Pumelele to take us through the presentation. Over to you, ma'am.
Greetings, Chairperson and the members on the platform and everyone. My name is Pumelele Ngema, the Parliamentary Legal Advisor. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I'm going to request, as it already flighted, that our committee secretary assist me with the presentation, and I will try to be as precise as possible, Chairperson. And on a lighter note, it is rather not safe and very intimidating, Chairperson, to come after such eloquent speakers and multilingual speakers that have spoken before me. Chairperson, my presentation, in light of the presentations that have taken place, is going to be basically on the constitutional issues and the procedure for the bill, just to guide the committee and a little bit on the content, Chairperson, to add into what has been indicated by the previous presenters and the submissions before the committee. Chairperson, my presentation basically the outline will address constitutional provisions that speak to the creation of Parliament and an appreciation that Parliament is a creature of law. Therefore, as the Chairperson had already pointed out, whatever Parliament does, either through the plenary of its two houses or through its committees, the portfolio and the select committees, it is done, guided and superseded by the law, Chairperson. Then the second outline point would be on making a distinction, a brief one, between a Section 76 and a Section 75, Chairperson, and then speak to the rules of Parliament that are guiding this process. And then I will generally, as I indicated, mention just a few pointers on the issues that have been raised and the submissions that we have received and the content of the bill and its constitutionality. And then I will conclude. To start with, Chairperson, as I pointed out, members are already aware that in terms of Chapter 4, that is where we get the full guidance of what Parliament must do of the Constitution, and that is why there is the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. And in light of the judgments that have spoken to the processes of the committee, as well as the processes of Parliament at large, one distinctive and crucial point that one of the cases on public participation mentioned and pointed out, which is why at all times Parliament is advised and Parliament ensures that when it does its work as either the National Assembly or the National Council of Provinces, it does its work to fulfill all the constitutional obligations that are into the Constitution, and ensures that in line with the provisions of the Constitution, they make and control the proceedings that they undertake in line with the Constitution. So in the Lamusa judgment, the court did confirm that if one of the Houses of Parliament fails in ensuring that it meets its mandate and it complies with its obligation to the full extent of its appreciation, then that failure will not only be attributed to one House, but a failure of either the National Assembly or the National Council of Provinces will automatically become the failure of the whole Parliament. And therefore, that is why in some recent cases, we've been getting judgments that are not favorable, especially when it comes to facilitating public involvement. And that is why, Chairperson, I've pointed out that we all are aware in terms of Section 59 of the Constitution that Parliament is expected to facilitate public involvement. And I believe that whole process has just transpired in terms of how the committee has engaged into the submissions and they're trying to explain back to the one submitter, being the South African Reserve Bank, who brought the submission before the committee in an attempt to influence the proceedings of this bill and the deliberations thereof. Next slide, please, ma'am. That having been said, Chairperson, I've made some few pointers in light of the judgments to indicate how other means can be used in order to ensure that there is public awareness, there is public education, and that the citizens and public at large are actually able to engage and influence the processes of the committee, Chairperson. And I've also pointed out that in terms of the submissions, Chairperson, I will speak to the few pointers which do not necessarily differ from what the other submitters have indicated to assist and support the committee. Then quickly, Chairperson, I will move straight to speak to the National Assembly Rule 286, which is the process that the committee is engaging on right now since the bill was referred to the Portfolio Committee. So, Chairperson, you've already pointed out that after me, there's going to be a motion of desirability, which is required in terms of National Assembly 2864 and 6. Maybe the distinction would solely be, can you move the slide, ma'am? The distinction would solely be on that perhaps the other one would be a motion of desirability if it was an executive bill as contrasted with the members or a committee's bill, which both are now able to be tackled before Parliament. But in this instance, the bill that we are tackling is an executive bill, which means it is sponsored from the executive, as was introduced by the minister in the presidency, Chairperson, on behalf of Statistics South Africa. In terms of the concerns, Chairperson, that are raised, I have two points that I want to make, and that would be in both whether there is misalignment or alignment in terms of the bill as proposed with the existing legislation, or secondly, whether it is really necessary to make a specific reference and call out to the institution that has asked. I've pointed out, Chairperson, that under the Constitution, we've already been given the definition of an organ of state. And I think one of the major amendments within the bill was to ensure that there is that alignment with the definition that we have in the Constitution. And I'm also pointing out for the information of the members that as South African Reserve Bank is also a constitutional institution, that all the courts have actually confirmed of its position and the provisions relevant to it have been mentioned by the submitters themselves. So in light of Section 239 in our jurisprudence, indeed, South African Reserve Bank is an organ of state. And if nothing more, basically for falling under 239B2 of the Constitution, which is basically saying any institution exercising public power in terms of a legislation, then by virtue of being such, the South African Reserve Bank is also falling within that. And therefore, the submissions are in alignment with the definition of the Constitution to say that as far as the bill and its proposals to amend the principal act, which is the Statistics Act of 1999, it is aligned. And as the state law advisors have also given their certification to confirm that it meets all the constitutional requirements as well as the drafting requirements before a bill is introduced in Parliament. Now, Chairperson, the second issue, perhaps before I touch on the rules, that I wanted to point out, as I indicated, that my submission does not really differ that much from what was presented, It is the fact that the inclusion into Clause 1 as proposed by the submitters, Chairperson, it will in a way contradict the legal principle that specifies that a specific portfolio legislation would take precedent whenever there is conflict. And therefore, in this instance and all the submissions that have been made, there is really no restriction or exclusion that the amendment is bringing about. And the explanation that's brought about by the Statistics General Office and the Deputy Minister in explaining the amendments in their entirety, it is clear, Chairperson, that that principle is maintained. And again, it ensures the equality that is required by Section 9 of the Constitution to ensure that including juristic persons or natural persons, everyone before the law must be treated equally and similarly. Therefore, Chairperson, just to conclude that point on my part, it is our submission that the amendment as it stands is very inclusive and encompassing of the issues that South African Reserve Bank has raised. And it would be difficult on the part of Parliament in all effect and essence to actually explain how were they singularly taken to get the superior position and single expression in the bill when the definition organ of state is actually encapsulating and inclusive of this entity, Chairperson. Thus, Chairperson, I think the main thing I wanted to cover then in respect of the rules, if we can move to the second, to the other slide, in terms of the rule is the tagging that was done by the joint tagging mechanism, which is the body in Parliament that concludes and makes a final finding on how a bill must be processed. In line and in consistently with the submissions of the state law advisors and ourselves as the Parliamentary Legal Advisor Office Chairperson, it is confirmed that the bill has been tagged as a Section 75, which means it is dealt separately from bills that are a Section 76, and that makes the process a little bit less cumbersome than a Section 76 bill would be, which means in this instance, once the processes of this committee have been completed, there's going to be a very smooth sailing and maybe a shortened time should the committee make a motion of desirability to adopt that this bill must go ahead and be deliberated on and be engaged as indicated and as has been briefed and submissions taken. So, Chairperson, what I wanted to point out in terms of the distinction between Section 75 and Section 76 is that if the next house, the second house, the National Council of Provinces, does not make any proposal or amendments considering the time frames that we are at, as most of the committees would be closing this week or Parliament as well will be rising to go to the constituency time, and the plenaries are also coming to an end before the end of the term. So, Chairperson, what I wanted to point out is that perhaps if the matter is finalized before this portfolio committee and it is referred while there is still time, and should the processes of the NCOP then not engage longer and require more time, and they agree with the bill as would be decided and adopted by this portfolio committee and passed on the second reading by the National Plenary of the National Assembly, then should they adopt it as is, it will be a quick process for the bill to go straight for assent to the president. But should there be a need that the second house is also making proposals and changes, if this committee would have had its own changes and we have a B bill version, and involve the processes of the CREDA, the outsourced company that ensures that if there are proposed amendments from each committee, they are then effected into the bill. So the processes will differ in that light depending on the decision of either committee of each House Chairperson. So a Section 75 bill is a bill that does not affect provinces by virtue of ensuring that it is an exclusive matter, like in this instance, it is neither mentioned under Schedule 4 or Schedule 5 of the Constitution. And that is one of the distinctions we use to make a determination whether a bill is a Section 75 or a Section 76 bill. And I've explained the distinction between the processes that mostly if it was a 76 process, it would involve a very stringent process where provinces must provide their mandates. And there are three different types of mandates. But in this instance, we are dealing with a Section 75 bill, which means, Chairperson, that process of a Section 76 and mandate would not really be necessary. That having been said, Chairperson, I now move to the rule, which is specifically to this process. And as this committee is a committee of the National Assembly, in terms of National Assembly Rule 286 and the proposal that was asked if we were to amend Section 17, members would note that Section 286(4)(c) stipulates that the committee must inquire into the subject of the bill and report on it to the assembly, where specifically if the bill amends provision of legislation, the committee must, if it intends to propose amendments to other provisions of that legislation, seek the permission of the assembly to do so. And I believe that is exactly what the chairperson spoke to, that should it be necessary and should the committee be persuaded to take the submissions as presented, then there will be another process that will need to run parallel with this process where the committee must request the permission of the assembly to go outside and beyond the introduced bill that is before them, being B31 of 2023. Now, that is a crucial requirement, Chairperson, but as also indicated, it's never cumbersome. It can always run parallel with the processes of the committee, because all that is requested is for the table of the National Assembly and procedure to prepare a request to go to the House, and then the House deliberates on the request. And then once permission is granted, the processes go as normal, in line with with what the committee would have decided as internal arrangements to run the proceedings of processing this bill. And then again, Chairperson, I think the two provisions, Roman figure I, in fact, subparagraph I and J basically explains the processes that should the committee with the next coming presentation and the proposal of a motion of desirability either choose to reject the processing of the bill or adopt the processing of the bill, it just outlines how that will be. So this process being a process which amends an existing legislation, Chairperson, it is clear that both subsection 4 and subsection 6 of the rules of the National Assembly under 286 will be invoked and is already happening in this instance, depending on the resolution of the committee once all the processes have taken place, Chairperson. That said, Chairperson, I think the two points that I have indicated, as well as explaining the process that needs to take place, I think, Chairperson, that is basically the summary of my presentation. And I would, with the guidance of the Chairperson, indicate as well and maybe bring the caution, Chairperson. I am now in slide 12, Madam. The caution that, again, if there are concerns in respect of the time frames and the time that Parliament is at, as I indicated when I started, we are almost at a point where recess and the constituency time for members of Parliament is about to take place, with the Houses having indicated in their programming when they would be ending off and which of the last day would be. I thought it's necessary to point out that it should not really concern members again that much that a bill might lapse in line with the rules, because there is also a process to revise in line with National Assembly Rule 333, which can be invoked as well, should it also be necessary to invoke National Assembly Rule 2864 in respect of going beyond the scope of the bill as introduced, Chairperson. I would end my submission and say thank you, Chairperson, and trust that I tried to explain the process and the procedure clearly, as well as the issues that arise out of the submissions. But generally, Chairperson, from the bill itself, there aren't really constitutional issues or legal concerns that we have picked up, and do confirm the certificate as well as the joint taking opinion that says this bill must be addressed as a Section 76 bill. I thank you, Chairperson.
As a Section 76 or 75?
Sorry, Chairperson, if I said 76, it is a Section 75 bill. 75. Yes.
In case you are testing if we are alive. Thank you, Ms. Ngema, for the presentation from Legal Services, enhancing and confirming issues from the earlier discussion as well. Any clarities, questions, honorable members, comments on the presentation by Legal Services, which speaks to our processes and issues of procedures, very important in a bill process. Do I have any takers? If you are happy, you will say so that we proceed and don't waste our time. No clarities. Happy with the presentation. Okay. I get that. Thank you very much, Ms. Ngema. It looks like you have just been on point in explaining what members in any case should know. And I take it that even the other institutions that are here would have listened to that to understand what we as the National Assembly in this case have to go through, and what we have got to take into account. Thank you very much. Can we now get to the next point? It will be the motion of desirability, Ms. Moy, and then thereafter we can do what Honorable Graham and others started, clause by clause and the recommendations that they had. Over to you, Ms. Moy.
Thank you, Chairperson. I believe the previous speaker has clearly outlined the purpose of the motion of desirability. So what's going to happen, Chairperson, I'm going to focus on the last part of the presentation, which is the motion of desirability. Because I believe honorable members have gone through the report, I will therefore read the motion, and then through you, Chairperson, members will indicate whether it's desirable or not desirable to continue with the bill. The motion of desirability is in line with Rule 286, subsection 4I of the National Assembly, which reads as follows. After due deliberations, the committee must consider a motion of desirability on the subject matter of the bill. And if rejected, the committee must immediately table the bill and its report on the bill. If the motion of desirability is adopted, the committee must proceed to deliberate on the details of the legislation. As part of strengthening the existing loopholes in the legislation governing statistics South Africa, the committee was of the opinion that the bill is either desirable or undesirable to deliberate on the details of the legislation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ms. Moy, for taking us through that. I now, honorable members, I'm going to be asking you, having you've read that, it's been presented now to you, is it desirable that we proceed and adopt to discuss this bill. Honorable Graham.
Chairperson, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to check whether or not we are a quorum to take this decision. And I tell you why I asked that, because I'm an alternate, so I can't vote. So I just wanted to make sure that we do meet the quorum requirements if we are voting on a decision. Thank you.
Thank you. That's fine. We'll check that. But if you're an alternate, we'll convert you into voting. But we'll check others. We need to have six members for that, I think, Ms. Moy. So I'm just checking who we have. We might need just one person to allow us to do that. Hopefully I'm counting correctly.
Chairperson, you only need one, but yes. You must bear in mind that Honorable Manyi was also part of our meeting.
Sure. Yeah, because it's not a new meeting, we're continuing. Can you just verify, Ms. Graham's being an alternate in the absence of those, she becomes a voting member in that regard, just to get that clarified.
Give me 2 minutes, Chairperson, I'll clarify.
Okay, no problem. Yes, Honorable Piri.
Yeah, it's member Piri. The fact that we is an alternate and the member is absent, it gives that member an opportunity to vote.
That's true. Thank you. I agree. Okay. We'll just take a 1 minute break. Did you get that, Honorable Graham?
I did. Thank you, Chairperson. And also, I can run in. I'm sitting in the restaurant outside Parliament, so I can always run in and ask Honorable Manyi to log on if necessary. Chairperson?
Ms. Moy? Yes.
My manager has just confirmed that Honorable Graham can vote.
Yeah, we have just clarified that. We agree. Thank you. We just took a minute or so that you also come back before we proceed. Okay. Thank you, members. Can we get to the next item? Mr. Ngwepe, is it you? Or is it who's taking us through that?
Chairperson, is Mr. Ngwepe. Yeah. Yeah, Chair, just before I proceed, I thought maybe members would then indicate if the motion is desirable or undesirable. I don't know if I've missed that.
Oh, okay. We were on that point. Yeah. Honorable Graham came in. So let me do that again. Thank you for that. Honorable members, is the bill therefore desirable for us to proceed with it? Ms. Moy has just presented the motion of desirability. And then Honorable Graham would have asked a clarity before I concluded that. That's the first point we must, first decision we must take. Is the motion desirable to proceed with this bill? Honorable Graham?
Seeing as I now have voting rights on this committee, I would like to propose that we proceed on a motion of desirability. I concur that it is a desirable bill.
Honorable Graham, taking advantage of her voting, is moving that to this motion is desirable. Any second?
I Piri Chair, I second the amendment desirable on behalf of all the components of the ASC. The motion is desirable.
Thank you, Honorable Piri. It's taking it far. Therefore, the motion is therefore adopted as desirable. Duly adopted as desirable. We now proceed. Thank you, Mr. Mwepe, to the next item, which should be leading us into dealing clause by clause. And I want to remind you, Honorable Graham, last week would have raised a few issues on the clauses, stating certain clause. Honorable Piri would have made certain recommendation, and I asked them to hold back because at that point we did not were not at the stage of deliberations. But Mr. Mwepe?
Thank you, Chairperson, good morning to honorable members and deputy minister and colleagues. Chair, I would like to propose that I encourage the members to have the original bill that Ms. Moy has sent to the members, so that we look at the bill, because I will be indicating in terms of the clause, the purpose of the clause, and then we look at the clauses. If members through you, Chair, if you allow me that we do it in that way, if members they've got any amendment on particularity for a parent case, clause number one that deals with the definition, then the members will then stop and then let's re-look at the area where they want to make amendment.
Well, that's fine. That's in order as long as Ms. Moore is going to be flighting that bill.
I will do that, Chairperson, from my
okay.
side.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's fine. That's fine then. So you take us therefore clause by clause or section by section in that way, and then I'm inviting members to comment.
Okay, Chair. Yeah, I'll do that. Let me switch off my video, Chair.
No problem. No problem.
Just 1 minute, Chair, while I'm still...
No, go ahead, it's fine.
Okay. Okay, Chair, I don't know if members can be able to see the screen I've just shared now.
It's coming, just be patient, it's not showing yet. I will tell you when it's showing. It just says, Julia Samantha's, there you go.
Okay. Okay, Chair, the previous speaker has already indicated the objects of the bill and the members, and I believe that we have been dealing with this particular bill since from September, Chair, up until now. What I will do is just to go through clause number one. Chair, this document was meant for, I mean, if you look at this table, it's not emanating from the bill, but I only inserted the areas in the bill, like in terms of the clause, what the clause needs to do. So what I will do, I will be projecting both two documents at the same time. Like now, clause number one, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, is the clause on the definition, which seeks to amend Section 1 of the Principal Act by substituting certain definitions, as well as by the setting of the new definitions. If honorable members and honorable chair look at on the document, if you see the amendment by South African Reserve Bank was already inserted on this, but as has already indicated, and this matter has been dealt with and then made the condition. I'm not going to make any comment on it, just to focus on the amendment bill. So if you allow me, Chair, let me just zoom into the into the bill itself, then members will indicate if they are comfortable with the definitions as per the amendment.
Okay, that relates to clause 1. Okay.
I'll try to move fast, Chair.
No problem.
Okay. Honourable members, here are the section that deals with the definition.
Sure.
I'm not going to reach the members.
No. I will. So, in terms of this, honourable members, one clause one, the definitions, and we've brought in front of you what is contained in the actual the bill itself. Any comments? Do you agree? Or are there any proposed changes you want to make so that we proceed?
Chairperson, my hand is up.
Yes, Honourable Graham, I just saw it now.
Oh, thanks, Chairperson. So under Section 1, you'll see there it defines an entity within the NSS, which means one, an organ of state, and two, any organisation. Now, I know that earlier on the legal advisor, the parliamentary legal advisor, stated that the organ of state adheres to the constitutional definition thereof, which is fine. The problem is that the entity within the NSS, the organ of state that falls within the NSS, doesn't mean every organ of state. And if you look further down at E, you'll see that it refers to other organizations. And there it says refers to organ of state that does not form part of the entities within the NSS. So our concern here is that potentially what should be done is that the organ of states within the NSS should be defined so that when you're talking about other organs of state that do not fall within the NSS, we know then who they are speaking to. Because obviously an organ of state that falls within the NSS has certain rights and responsibilities, etc., that other organs of state might not necessarily have. So we're just concerned at the lack of clarity with respect to the definition of an organ of state within the NSS versus one that is outside of the NSS. So I don't know if that makes sense, but I think it must be more clearly defined in order to ensure that we know who's responsible and who isn't.
Okay. Thank you. We'll keep that and pack that so that they'll be responded to. But any other comments on these definitions and on clause one? Okay, thank you. None. Mr. Mwepe, so can we then?
Okay, Chair, let me proceed. I don't know if our colleagues from Legal Service, I don't know this.
Okay, Ms. Ngema is here. She's got her hand up. Ms. Ngema?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to check with the direction of the Chair whether you would want us to attempt the answers after the question per clause, or you want us to come with all of them in the end, just the clarity, Chairperson, especially now that there was a question in respect of clause one.
I want us to do it after I've exhausted all questions per clause, so we don't park all of them. If that is fine with you, like as well as I'm suggesting now, in clause one, under this definition, there would have been a clarity sought in terms of consistency of the definitions, and there's no other question of clarity, and therefore I would like us to respond to this, and then when we move to the next, we start that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think on my end, just to answer to that question, Chairperson, if we look at the definition for entity within the NSS as explained and the definition under D, National Statistics System, before we go to E, it is very clear, Chairperson, and I think the second part there does clarify the issue as it says, and units within the Republic of South Africa that jointly collect, process, and disseminate official and other statistics. So
So to list Chairperson, the issue with listing is that we may not be proactive enough to think of everything and every other institution. Hence, it's always safe in legislation to be as concise as possible rather than attempt to be as exhaustive, because as humans, we are fallible and cannot really be able to think of everything and everyone. But I believe that the definitions as brought before the committee, they are sufficient to be inclusive and covering of everyone that could be sought or understood to be needed as part of this process, Chairperson. That would be my clarity. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Does that help, Honorable Graham? And also, as you come in, members, I have just decided on your behalf whether you want to ask these clarities and questions and then you are responded at the end after everything, or we do it clause by clause. Sorry.
That's fine, Chairperson. I'm happy with the explanation.
Okay. And would you be happy as well, we do it clause by clause, or should we pack all of them and respond at everything at the end? What's the better way?
I think clause by clause is better, because otherwise you could get confused with everything.
Okay. Thank you. Agreed, Honourable Members? Okay. We'll proceed, Mr. Mwepe, to the next.
Yeah, the next one, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, is about is the clause 2 that deals with the conflicts with other legislation.
Yes.
Clause 2 makes provision for dealing with conflicts with other legislation. To look at this particular part, Honorable Chair, if there's anything from members, just if you amend it.
Where it says the provisions of this act prevail where there's conflict relating to the matters dealt with in this act.
Thank you, Chair.
All right, members, your take. You happy with that?
Happy, Chair.
Thank you. Remember, the clause by clause thing means that we must just stay on it. So I can't be missing you, guys. Thank you, Honorable Piri. Agreed. We proceed. Next.
Okay. And the next one, Chair and Honorable Members, is the clause 3 that deals with aligning principal act with pivotal role the SG plays in relation to statistics in the Republic. This is the part, Chair, where it says Section 2 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. So this is the only part if members would
You're missing me. Where are you now? Where are you reading from?
Okay. The next clause, Chair, is the clause 3. Is about the alignment of the principal act with what role the SG plays in relation to the statistics in the Republic.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any comments, clarities on that, colleagues?
Happy with that clause, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Graham. Agreed. We'll proceed.
Okay. The next clause is clause 4. It's about the role of the national statistics system in the production and the use of statistics.
You got cut. Just please repeat that again.
Okay. The next clause is clause number 4, that deals with the role of the national statistics system in the production and use of statistics. Clause 4 seeks to amend the heading of Section 3 of the Principal Act in order to highlight the role of the national statistics system in the production and the use of statistics, and to outline it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, the clause
4. Comment, Honorable Graham?
Now, Chairperson, it's a clarity-seeking question. If you look at 3, it says the purpose of the NSS is to serve as a coordination structure for the production and use of official and other statistics. And then it says entities within the NSS other than organs of state must enter into partnership agreements. My question then is, does that mean that automatically organs of state are required to report without there being any form of partnership agreement or any service level agreement or anything? So I just wanted some clarity on the role of organs of state versus other entities as reflected in this clause. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, any clarity there, response?
Yeah, I think there's nothing that prohibits the chair to request a better clarity from the
I see they are raising their hands. Yandi, something?
Thank you, Chair. The way we saw this clause, it was that all organs of state will be members of the NSS. So the agreement will be entered into between CSSA and other entities if they are not organs of state. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, does that help, Honourable Dram?
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy with the explanation.
Thank you. We'll proceed, Mr. Mwepe.
Yes, Chair. Okay, the next clause, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, deals with the aligning the description of statistics of South Africa with the Public Service Act.
Which clause is that now? Where are you?
Let me move.
Because this thing is not moving. I must follow you properly.
Okay. Yes. I'm in this part.
That's five. Are you at five?
Yeah, I'm at five, yes.
Okay. Okay. Please go ahead.
Yeah. The clause seeks to amend section 4.1 of the principal act by aligning the description of statistics of Africa with section 7.2A and schedule 1 to the Public Service Act 1994. So this is the part, Chairperson, 5.4 of the principal act.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have no issues, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Graham. Any other member with any queries or questions? None. Thank you. We'll proceed, Mr. Mwepe.
Okay, Chair. The next clause is clause. Deals with the census. That is all about the census to be conducted by the SC every 10 years.
Yes.
Yes, clause 6. It seeks to amend section 7 of the Principal Act. Chairperson, if I may, without even reading it all together.
Okay. Any comment, clarity, or question, Honorable Graham?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a couple of things on this one. If you look at C, it says there, CA says cause a population census to be taken in the year 2001 and every 10 years thereafter. Now, I'm assuming it was 5 in the past, and I'm wondering whether or not this can then be applied retrospectively to 2001 and whether or not we shouldn't substitute 2001 with 2022 to legitimize what we're saying here, because if it hadn't been every 10 years after 2001, then we were really contravening the legislation. So it's just a clarity on my side whether or not we shouldn't just make it from in the year 2022, which was the last big census, and then add in every 10 years thereafter, if that's what we agree on. And then just with respect to the 10 years, and I raised this last week, we do believe that 10 years is too long to have just nothing in between. So we would like to know whether or not we can't include somewhere in the legislation that we find alternative mini censuses. So you have a micro census, a rolling census, registered based censuses. So something else in between, because obviously the statistical data gleaned from a census is required to make decisions by, for example, the SA Reserve Bank and by government in terms of, you know, even your sort of DORA, your equitable share that goes to provinces and municipalities, all of that is based obviously on statistical data that has been taken. So we're very concerned that we have this broad 10-year gap And nothing in between. So possibly we have to either look at including additional kinds of censuses that fill that gap, or we need to look at how we can address the budget and resourcing of the department so that they can do the census every 5 years. So those are the two things we have to weigh up here. But to just have a blanket 10 years, I think is going to be very problematic in terms of planning for this country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Graham. Honorable Graham, maybe I'll ask Ms. Mpecheni, because my understanding was that today, so she can respond to CA, but in relation to the 10 years, they already would have community surveys and issues of household surveys and so on. If you can clarify that, because I think the SG would have said there's a lot of initiative in between the 10 years that begin to close that gap. Maybe she can just assist us there for those two areas, Ms. Mpecheni.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Graham. Indeed, Chair, you are correct. We have a lot of surveys in between the 10 years. Others are annual, others are periodic, others are quarterly. But we have one intercensal survey, which is what we refer to, Chair, as the community survey. So yeah. That's what we do in between censuses. So we don't wait for the entire 10 years before we get more granular information that go down to local level, local municipality level. We always having all these intercensal surveys. And we are about to introduce another survey called the Continuous Population Survey, which will give us more granular data every 3 years. So I'm not sure if that's a matter that we should put in the legislation, or it should be something that we do in practice. Thank you, Chair.
And then on the CA, this 2001, did you check that? Cause the population census to be taken in every year, 2001.
Yes.
Honorable Graham.
I think,
can you help us again?
Chair, this one will need our legal minds. I have Bruce on the platform and Ronald. What I do know, however, is that the census, if you say from 2022 and every 10 years thereafter, the census was done, the first one, we started 2001, so it's supposed to be 2021, not 2022. So we think of going back to 2031. Now it's going to be out of sync, but I'll ask Ronald and Bruce to respond. Thank you, Sean.
Okay, I see. Your response?
From me, Chair?
You can respond so far on what she has responded to, Honorable Graham.
All right. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I think if we can, I know that there's an implementation plan that needs to be done, so possibly those additional censuses can be included in that. And then I think at least we'll be covered. I think it's just important that somewhere we recognize that we need ongoing statistical data for planning.
Sure. Okay. Ms. Mpecheni, any of your other team you wanted to, okay, Mpumelele? Okay, Calvin?
I am trying on the phone, Chairperson, as I indicated, so it takes a bit longer. I was hoping my learned friends, as mentioned from the department, were going to come in on this one. But I think, Chairperson, there's a valid point in terms of the prospectivity of the issue of 2001 and the point of 2022 that has been just pointed into where it happened that we then did not do it within the 5 years. Considering, Chairperson, as I pointed out, that it is an existing legislation, I think in light of the issue of retrospectivity, it might not really impact because it has already happened and nothing is going to be changing moving forward, except that from here onwards, it will have to be calculating the 10 years and when it falls into. But I think it may also do no harm if the committee feels that we must correct that and remove the 2001 in light of the discrepancies that have been pointed out, and just point that every 10 years there must be a census, because the 2001 was meant to indicate the starting point when the power to do the census was given in terms of legislation.
I don't know if that makes sense, Chairperson, but it can be, depending what the Stats SA indicates, it can be a decision of the committee to say we can clean up that and make a general amendment that says the statistics general must cause a population census to be done every 10 years without specifying from when it started, because in any case, this law would remain in the statute book to indicate when it started. But moving forward, I don't think the amendment will cause any harm if it's done to clean up that sentence in paragraph A. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Calvin?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. I think Ms. Mpumelele really clarified and rather talked to the point that I wanted to really raise. I think the reason there's a reference to 2001 is because the Statistics Act indeed came in 1999. And at that time, it was still envisaged that having done the census in 1996 with a 5-year period, the next one would therefore be 2001. And then post 2001, it would then go into a different cycle. So I think that clarifies me very well, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, does that help, Honourable Members and Honourable Graham and other members?
I'm happy, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. You also
happy, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Piri. You're also happy with the fact that the earlier extension about the fact that there would not be a gap. There will be those community surveys and others in between to kind of back up the census, that basically saying that in a period of 10 years before the next census, there's a lot of other activities that almost like build up to the next census that gets to be done. Are we happy with that? Some of those might not necessarily have to be included in the bill or act.
Happy with that, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Mwepe. We'll proceed.
Okay, Chairperson. Just on the very same clause, if members can look at the section 7H, the issue that was raised, that was the consultation between the Statistics South Africa and the South African Reserve Bank, has been also been covered, Chairperson, in the amendment.
We say 7H.
Yeah.
Take us to 7H.
Yeah. Okay. It says by the addition in subsection 2 of the following paragraph, establish a body or unit within statistics of actual coordinate entities within the NSS and publish all official statistics, including those arising from. It's 7.3, we seek to promote research in statistical work and empower statisticians in general to grant access to data where it is lawfully possible and to enable statisticians in general to have access to data.
Okay.
Yeah, but I was reading. This particular paragraph, promoting statistical research, in particular by providing access where he or she may be lawfully to do so, and the data under his or her leadership. So that matter is also covered, Honorable. Just to make an emphasis on it.
Okay, thanks for the emphasis. Honorable Graham?
Sorry, Chair, I just want to grab on before we finish this section. I apologize for the noise in the background. I hope you can hear me. I'm in the dining room and everybody's shouting. Chair, if you look on the at the top of page 5L, you'll see there number 6, the statistician general must, for the purpose of producing official statistics, have access to any data from any producer or entity within the NSS at no cost. Now, I have a huge issue with this because I think that the SG's powers are too broad in this respect. What they're saying here is any data from any producer or entity within the NSS at no cost. Now, there's a partnership agreement that gets signed between the NSS and entities other than organs of state. Now, to me, that should be the basis of the relationship, and that should define what data the SG has access to and how that relationship plays out. So this clause to me actually negates the partnership agreement by predetermining the scope of the information that the SG has access to. I also think that this could be unconstitutional because data of a private organization is intellectual property. And this clause allows a form of expropriation without compensation of intellectual property. So I have a big problem with that clause in particular.
Okay, can we get elaboration, Ms. Mpecheni and your team?
Thanks. The reason we put this clause in was for us to be able to access information that we need for purposes of official statistics. For example, we get information from the Surveyor General on rental properties that we have heard that the Reserve Bank is paying for. So we're thinking that such information should be available to the SG at no cost. But if Honorable Graham has a problem with this, and maybe the committee would like us to rephrase this, but we're actually asking for information that should be used for official statistics purposes. That's how we answer. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Manamela.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to intervene. Can I go ahead?
You want to ask something?
No. I just wanted to say that I think the point I made earlier on is that we are currently paying a private company to access data that is coming from the DIS office, which we give to Status A. So the Reserve Bank is funding that particular transaction because we had interest in the data ourselves on the residential property index. But I think the point that I think Status is making is that we can, I think, as public entities or state organs, I think providing that service, I think, at a cost. So I think this is really confined to members of the NSS and not private entities. So I think there is I want to support the clause as is, if I'm allowed. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, you're not supporting, you're just clarifying. Mr. Masabota, what a decision. You help us, you just help us with clarity. Thank you, Mr. Manamela. Pumelele?
Thank you so much, Chair. I think with respect of the concern, Chairperson, and going back to the definition of national statistics system, and who is involved there. One may argue that not necessarily that this provision may amount to expropriation without compensation, because it says it's the ensemble of statistical organizations and units within the Republic of South Africa that in any case jointly collect, process, and disseminate. So, in a way, Chairperson, I think if there's already been an understanding with those that are within the system, even the structures that would not be under government but are private structures, and StatsSA explaining that in light of that definition, does it really occur that this information is collated and does not include any cost? Otherwise, I think if that would not be easily explained, we may then need to relook at that phrase at no cost, because it can, to a degree, create some legal issues, even if we may not necessarily take it to the extent of expropriation without compensation. But it is a concern that perhaps need clear clarity for the committee to find its stand and position, whether it leaves it as is or some rephrasing is done so that concern is allayed. Thank you, Chair.
So if we listen to Mr. Manamela and Mpecheni, so the issue of at no cost was more of an emphasis. So is there a problem when you end within the NSS and full stop? Because if those relationships are there, so there's a way to attend to them. So can I invite you more to talk to this? Honorable Graham?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, you see, my concern with this is that at the end of the day, the entities within the NSS that are not organs of state will already have signed a service level agreement or a partnership agreement or whatever it's called. Now this clause to me then supersedes that. And it takes away whatever is agreed to in that partnership agreement by saying that they have access to any data from any producer or entity at no cost. So my feeling here is that we need to then create an additional an add-on to this within the framework of the partnership agreement. To me, then that would cover the whole thing, and it would then limit it to what has been agreed to in that partnership agreement. And a partnership agreement that gets drafted can then say, you know, the terms of this agreement can be changed by mutual consent, et cetera, et cetera. But at least then there's not this global, we can come into your company and take any information that we deem is important for us to produce our statistics. So I just think it's just a way of protecting intellectual property, and it's protecting entities against work that they've possibly invested money in, and then that just gets taken away from them at no cost. So for me, if we could include something within the confines of the partnership agreement, I think that would then cover it.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Graham. Back to you, Ms. Becheni, Calvin.
Thank you, sir. I think we can include what Honorable Graham is saying, because in the memorandum of understanding we always have a place for financial implications. So if this can be negotiated at the level of the agreement that will have been signed between us and the entities of the NSS. Thank you, Chair. So we can consider that change. As you said, remove the at no cost, or as Honorable Graham says, we include that within the confines and whatever we have agreed upon in the MOU. Thank you.
Okay. So if we're saying within the NSS and full stop, so it won't affect the performance of State SA. Pumelele, you have your mic open. Go ahead.
No, Chairperson, I think it was the last time I spoke, but I don't think, except that I think what you are saying, you are giving room for us to consider either the removal or to add the suggested provision, whether in case it aligns. But what I'm gathering is that there definitely is going to be an amendment in respect of clause 6 and the amendment of section 7 with the addition of subsection 6.
Okay. Are we all happy with that? So that we can proceed with that arrangement. Honorable Piri, Honorable Graham.
Happy Chair. I'm fine.
I'm happy, Chair.
Well, okay. Thank you. Let's proceed, Mr. Mwepe, to the next.
Okay, Chair. The next one is clause number 7. Okay. Clause number 7, that deals with the substitution in subsection of organ of state and the weight entities within the national statistics system. Clause 7 proposes an amendment to section 18 of the Principal Act by the substitution in subsection 1A for the weight in inverted commas, that organ of state within the weight entities within the NSS. Does it, Chair?
Okay.
Yeah.
I have no issues with this clause, Chair.
Thank you. Agreed.
Okay. The next clause, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, clause 8, is about inclusive coordinated approach for data procedures and users. The clause seeks to amend section 14 of the Principal Act by the substitution of the heading of the section so as to highlight an inclusive coordinated approach where all data producers and users will be able to collaborate and receive similar advice from the Statistician General insofar as the quality criteria, classification, and norms and standards of data are concerned.
Okay. Comments? Are we agreed, Honourable Graham?
Chairperson, yeah, I'm just concerned that under C or 13A, it says develop and implement a statistical system known as the NSS. Now we've got an NSS which is a body, and now we've got a system which is known as the NSS, and it doesn't clarify. So, sorry, people are shouting. So at this stage, I think the biggest issue I have is that there could be confusion created because they're using NSS in two different contexts. One is a body and one is a system. And I think that's just one thing that needs to be looked at in terms of the way that this has been formulated.
Okay. Ms. Mbecheni.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Graham. Yes, I see what the confusion could be because the NSS is defined is an ensemble of all these data collectors, processors, and people who disseminate statistical information. So it becomes both a system and a body. But I think we'll try and find ways that will clarify this, Chair. Because we use it as both as a system and also as this ensemble of all of these data producers who come together to give information within the NSS system. So I guess it's a bit confusing. We'll try and find ways that can clarify it. Thank you, Chair. Calvin can add. Calvin, if you are back in, please. Or not. Harry is here if Calvin is not able to. Harry, would you like to add? I don't know.
Harry, you can't mute yourself. you have no. Okay. Fine. Whilst we're checking them, Honourable Graham, did you get that response?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair, and I'm very happy with that response. I think it'll clear up any confusion.
Okay. All right. We'll proceed, Mr. Mwepe.
Yeah, Chair, if I may proceed, clause 8 has got a number of, sub-clauses, but it was just to emphasize, I don't know if honorable members want me to go through those, but like 8.2. I think up until 8, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know if members would want to go through each and everyone under clause 8.
Chairperson, I don't think it's necessary. I don't think there's anything too controversial in that clause. Other than 15, which I'd like to speak to, which is this, page 6.
Before you speak to 15, are we agreed that to proceed from other members before you get to 15? If nobody is saying anything that's agreed to, we can proceed, Mr. Mwepe. Let's get to 15.
Honorable Graham is talking about close, 15 years. Okay, let me just check here.
No, not close 15, but I think sub 15 and sub 15.
Yeah.
That's okay. Correct. On page 6 there, it's right, it's on the screen now.
On page 6, okay.
So if I may proceed, Chair.
Go ahead.
If you look at that clause, you will see that there are a number of entities that or structures that need to be instituted and implemented by the Statistician General. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different systems that need to be put in place. Now, my concern with that is that There's no budget allocation for that. And if you look at Section 20B, it says there that the Statistician General must provide assistance, facilitation, and coordination. In other words, there are a whole host of bodies that have to be established, and there's no budgetary allocation for that. So I think something has got to be done in terms of addressing that these are requirements in terms of the legislation that might create a huge problem with respect to whether or not they can be met due to budgetary constraints.
Okay, so repeat the point you're making, because I'm sure you're not saying we should include in the bill, in the act, that. So in summary, what are your concerns?
So essentially the act is saying that the Statistician General must coordinate and provide these activities and these structures.
Yes.
And then later on it says that they must provide assistance, facilitation and coordination. So the concern here is whether or not it should be an imperative in terms of must, or whether or not we can clarify it in terms of, within terms of budgetary constraints, because there's a whole host of activities that are going to have to be done, but there doesn't seem to be any implementation plan around that speaks to a budget available. So if the Statistician General implements these or can't implement them because of budgetary constraints, then he falls foul of the law. So maybe what the only way we can do that is say, maybe, the Statistician General may, within budgetary constraints or whatever, then promote. It's just a suggestion, but I'm deeply concerned at the number of things that need to be implemented and done, and that there's not even budget to do a census.
Okay. Steph SA.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Honorable Graham. This bodies already exist because in the reporting on sustainable development goals, we have to have all of these technical working committees. We have to have a coordinating structure that is headed by the SG. We are the secretariat of SA. So a lot of what is in here is stuff that already exists that will not need more budgeting. Even within the NSS, we have a unit called the South African National Statistics System. We have a unit there within that goes to give technical support to members of to entities in the NSS. So I'm not sure, Chair, if we are already doing this by practice, whether this will still be problematic for Honorable Graham. Thank you.
Okay, you're saying that's already been done. Honorable Graham, did you get that response?
Yes, I did. Thank you. And if that is the case, then obviously we can't object to that. I just wanted to make sure that we wouldn't put the SG in a position where he was falling foul of his own law.
Thank you. I think that's clarified based on the practice that she just explained. Thank you for that. We'll proceed, Mr. Ngwepe.
Yeah, thanks. The next clause is clause number 9, about the deletion of phrase other than a private dwelling to limitation faced by SG or any officer.
Okay, I don't speak that. Where are you? Who's moving your stuff?
I'm waiting on two screens. I remember the earlier document.
Okay, I remember. Okay.
So the other. Okay.
We don't want to lose you. We want to work with you. So,
okay. No,
this is where we are now. Okay.
Okay. No. Yeah. No. This is the clause number 9. It's about the deletion of phrase other than a private dwelling in inverted commas, the limitation faced by SG or any officer. So this clause proposed an amendment to section 15, the subsection 1. Of the Principal Act by the deletion of the phrase other than private dwelling to address the limitation faced by a Statistician General or an officer of Statistics South Africa when carrying out his or her duties for statistical purposes in terms of Principal Act.
Okay. Comment on that, members? Honorable Graham?
All right, Chair. I promise you this is my last input on the legislation. Chair, I have a huge issue with this clause. So I really don't think we should be removing other than a private dwelling. I think that this affects our constitutional right to privacy. And the only way that it can be justified is if the importance of the limitation is greater than the right. Now, given our crime rates and our current GBF issues, GBV and GBF, it cannot be allowed for a woman to be denied the right to prevent access to her dwelling by strangers. The clause specifically states as well that they can inspect anything thereon or therein. So again, this impacts on the right to privacy, which specifically protects a person from having their person or home or property searched. And then the Principal Act qualifies this as with a warrant or with consent. So in other words, if there's no consent, then they can get a warrant. And as I said last time, the warrant is in chambers, which means that a person doesn't even have the opportunity to defend the warrant, and it can be done without them. They, you know, they have no part to play in it. So the Principal Act even allows for inspection by night, where it says if justifiable and necessary. So who decides and how can a private dwelling be included in this? The warrant allows them to enter even if the person in control of the property is not present. And again, this cannot be allowed for a private dwelling. So I would please suggest that we do not remove the clause, the phrase other than a private dwelling, because I think this is going to, it's going to become unconstitutional. And I think it carries a very real threat of danger, particularly for women who live alone. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, we hear you, Ms. Mpecheni and your team.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Graham. Calvin is going to assist with this, but I will take a first shot. The reason we wanted to remove other than a private dwelling is that when we draw samples for household surveys, we draw a sample of dwelling units, which then means our field officers have to go to that particular dwelling, knock on the door, and gain entry so that they can do our household surveys. And when we say other than a private dwelling, then it makes our job much tougher if we are going to exclude the private dwelling in this clause. So that's the reason that we thought we should remove as than a private dwelling, because we have to access private dwellings when we're doing our normal surveys. In the census, it's even worse. You have to access them, all the dwelling units, not just those in the sample. But I will ask Calvin to talk to a field record verification processes that we have and any other thing he has on this. Calvin, over to you.
Through your chair, indeed, I think Ms. Mpecheni emphasizes on the methodological aspects of surveys and censuses. Our sampling frame indeed focus on households, and in this regard would prefer to collect information from members of the public within the confines of their own comfortable space. But as we also transited into the digital collection, one of the quality assurance processes that we had embedded in our system is such that a questionnaire cannot be opened on a tablet unless the field worker is within a certain meters from the house itself. So in actual fact, the Act is not intended rather to infringe the privacy of household, private household members, but rather emphasizing the importance of household members to actually answer questions as posed by, let's say, field staff. But in addition to that, Chairperson, we have got what we call field worker verification system, where members of the public can go on our website and verify any individual standing in front of them, whether they are authentic employee of Status A or not, in addition to a toll-free that members could also verify any individuals. But if members of the public, which we have always also emphasized in our training, are not comfortable with an individual presenting themselves in front of their household, they don't necessarily have to open the house for the individual to do the collection inside the structure. Our tablets are such that they've got a protective screen, which also assists with the reducing the glaring of the sun on the screen. So they could actually interview each other outside the dwelling, one being the other side of the fence and the other one on the opposite. And that is it's really intended to make sure that where members of the public are uncomfortable, such discomfort is reduced in that way. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. There you go. Is that in any way assisting Honourable Graham, maybe before you, Ms. Ngema?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also think perhaps it would assist to clarify that what exercise might have gone here was to look into Section 14, the right to privacy, against Section 36 to see whether the limitation is justified. Yeah. Furthermore, whether the limitation can be legal and arguably correct in a manner that they have explained the processes that goes to ensure the protection. Because if you look at Section 14, it does say everyone has a right to privacy, where that person can then make a stance to say, I do not want to be searched, or I do not for whatever reason. So I think in the manner that what is drafted now, what they are trying to clarify, because as they have indicated, other than a private dwelling was making an exclusion of a private place to be entered or to be accessed. And they are indicating that there have been challenges in respect of that restriction or that limited access, which comes out of the legislation itself. So with the proposal now, it suggests that this, other than a private dwelling, since it's bold and in bracket, it must come out so that access, both through the Constitution and through this legislation, is enabled. So they are trying to clear the enabling provision to ensure that even in the private dwellings where they were prohibited by virtue of this exclusion, and it was an exclusion in their very own legislation, they are trying to correct that and ensure that the exclusion is not necessarily a prohibition, because there are legal instances to follow to ensure that the right to privacy will not be harmed in any way, Chairperson. So I think there is some way of protection that arises from the balancing exercise that has been done in respect of ensuring that the right to privacy under Section 14 of the Constitution and Section 36 limitation is properly so, by virtue of all those other provisions that say, before you can do that, make sure that there is a consent, make sure that you have a warrant. And furthermore, what Section 14 provides cannot be overridden or ignored by virtue of opening the access to the private dwelling. So I think there is an explanation and a balancing exercise done to ensure that this right will not be harmed in any way, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. That seems to be a very elaborate explanation from both teams. Can we proceed with that? Can we leave with that, Honourable Graham?
Chairperson, no, unfortunately I can't, and I'll tell you why. Because at the end of the day, I believe that this clause is in contravention of Section 14 of the Constitution, because it allows them, it doesn't stipulate to the fact that there's certain processes that need to be followed. It doesn't allow for a withholding of consent, because later on in the Principal Act, it speaks to Stats SA being allowed to go and get a warrant without a person being able to defend that warrant, and that they can enter the premises without the person being on the premises without permission. So at the end of the day, I don't believe that this justifies, I don't believe that the limitation on the right to privacy is sufficiently warranted in terms of the collection of statistical data. And despite the fact that the gentleman said that the people can stand outside, it doesn't say that. It says enter on any land or premises, and it says that they can inspect anything thereon or therein. In other words, that they have the right of access to somebody's house without their consent. And I think that that's a huge issue, given the high levels of crime. And yes, there are vetting of the people who do these censuses, but these are just people from the community. They just take people who apply. So at the end of the day, you can't guarantee that a person that's been appointed to do a census is not some sort of, criminal rapist or thief or whatever. And then I have no recourse to say no to allowing that person to enter my premises. I have a huge issue with that. I'm not going to allow somebody just to come into my property because they tell me they're coming to collect my information. So I really do believe that this is a huge issue in terms of Section 14, as well as the right to protection of your security of your person. So I honestly do believe that we have to leave a private dwelling in. There's no ways that government should have a right to overrule your right to privacy within your house. This is not a criminal matter. This is a administrative issue. And a warrant should not be able to override your right to privacy in a matter that is not criminal. It isn't covered by law. So I do have a huge issue with this.
Thank you, Honourable Graham. I thought that Ms. Nyama would have indicated that, and which is not only for this case, Section 14, which is that privacy you're speaking strong on, but that in every respect, all our rights are limited in terms of Section 36 of the Constitution. And so there's a need for a proper balance. I remember here we're making a law, and when we do that, to make the law very prescriptive can create its own kind of problems. Ms. Ndema, you wanted to come back, otherwise we might have to leave this and come back to conclude other sections.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be brief and perhaps just to bring more clarity. As I said, it's a principal act, and Honourable Graham Mare did point into having read the provision as it stands in the existing legislation. Under sub 2, Chairperson, of 15.2, when we start with 15.1, it says the entering and the going against this would be on the authority of a warrant, and the warrant is issued by a magistrate or a judge of the High Court only if they are satisfied. And these two officials of the court and functionaries, they are ministering justice. So a warrant, unless these officials are satisfied, would not be granted, because it is granted by the magistrate or judge. It is not made administratively within the Statistics General, but it is made by a court or a court in the name of the magistrate or a judge of the High Court. And then furthermore, Chairperson, as I said, it says on the authority of the warrant or by consent. So there's no way that you will enter someone's premises either without their consent, because the first instance would be to go there and have an agreement. But if the person refuses, that is when the warrant process takes place and you go to a court and require a warrant. And the warrant cannot be issued willy-nilly, because it is issued by a magistrate or a high court. It is not even done clerically by the clerks, but the provision in the existing Act is very clear that the courts are involved, and therefore there is judicial intervention and oversight for whoever would be wanting to go against the person who's refusing to give their consent. And the process before courts normally is a process where both parts are given a chance to be heard. It cannot be an agent or an interlocutor, something that is done in the absence of another person. So that is why I said, if you look at the existing provision, it does outline the process that must be followed. Otherwise, then, if it was failing that, then the exercise of balancing the two rights in Section 36 would have to come into operation. And I believe the manner that the provision is drafted, it has taken into account those instances, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Ngema. We might have to proceed from here. I see your last hand, Honourable Graham.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'd just like to correct Ms. Ngema. The warrant that gets applied for is applied for in chambers, which means that it doesn't have to be defended, which means that SAPSSA can go to a magistrate in their chambers and say to them, listen, this person's refusing us access. Can you please sign off on it? Like a warrant, to go and inspect somebody's house. So the person who's withholding consent does not get the right of refusal or the right to defend the reasons why they're withholding consent, because it's not done in a court. It is done in chambers. So that's the one issue we have, is that you don't have the right to even defend that. So you withhold consent, then they go and they get a warrant, without your permission, without your input, without you having a chance to defend it. Then they come to your house. They have right of access to your house on the basis of a warrant. They can walk into your house, inspect anything therein or thereon, because that's what the Act says, and you have no right to stop them. I'm sorry, I still believe that this is a huge issue in terms of an invasion of privacy and security of the person. So I really feel that this is a clause that we will not be able to support unless other than a private dwelling remains part of the Act. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Graham. We note your concerns in that regard. I think I would have allowed the team to thoroughly explain themselves in terms of why they need this and the processes that follow. But I note that. Mr. Ngwepe?
Okay, Chair. The next clause is clause 10. Which deals with offences and penalties. Clause 10 proposed an amendment to Section 18 of the Principal Act, which deals with offences and penalties for a contravention of certain provisions.
Okay. No comment. We'll proceed.
Yeah, the next clause, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, is clause 11 that empowers the Minister to make regulations. Clause 11 seeks to amend the Principal Act by the insertion of a new section 20A, which empowers the Minister to make regulations. Yes, clause 11, Chair.
Comment that clause. None. Proceed.
Yeah, they, unfortunately, they have a condition.
The other one. So you've also now taken after the SG. you're done now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, this is the last loss. Yeah, Chair. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So thank you. So we would have done the motion of desirability. We've now just concluded the clause by clause. And in that process, had a good discussion on each of those clauses. And we spent a bit of time on the last one, and which Honorable Graham said would have been her last comment on, and she has felt very strong on that, having noted her strong views on why private dwelling should be removed, and we have noted that as I indicated. So we're done with this in terms of the deliberations clause by clause, Mr. Ngwepe. What is our next step?
Our next step, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, based on the, I think there are certain amendments that the Statistics South Africa has agreed to relook at together with our parliamentary legal services, because now the bill is before Parliament. So then our next step is for
allow for that space.
For them So when we come back, they would have made certain amendments based on the clauses that members felt that they really need to go revisit those clauses. I think they were not major. It was just only a few, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. And when we come back, then they will then present the B list. The B list of the B list.
Those amendments.
Yeah, those amendments, and then from there, then the committee will have to adopt, and then adopt the report, and then we send the bill back to the National Assembly House.
Okay.
Yeah. So that will happen next year, early end January, early February. Yeah.
Okay. I see the hand of Ms. Ngema. Thank you, Mr. Ngwepe.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. With the explanation that just has been given, there are three provisions that we need to look at. It's clause 6, clause 8, and clause 9.
Yeah.
Clause 6 and clause 8 would be easy to do that amongst ourselves. But I believe clause 9, for purposes of coming up with a proposal, I think the committee does need to take a resolution and guide us here whether, because what is left with clause 9 is whether that provision other than a private dwelling comes out so that that exclusion is no longer there, but it will say any land or any premises can be accessed. So that one, Chairperson, is straightforward, but I think if we were to come up with something, a resolution of the committee is necessary, unless the Chairperson is saying perhaps in the next meeting, it will be a meeting to still come back and find one another, having thought through, rather than to come with the preparation of a proposed amendments that would be ready for adoption by the committee, Chairperson. So my point, basically, to summarize, I think clause 9 is contentious, not even easy for us to take a position as the supporting staff, but a resolution of the committee is necessary. Thank you, Chair.
That's fine. I hear you. One more time was spent on. I had exhausted your elaborations as yourself and States SA. There's a very strong feeling on Member Graham on that. At this stage, I'm hoping that we can find each other, I mean, with application of mind. I am not eager that we go for a vote on the matter as it stands. I think it is that section, and I am satisfied as a chair that there are quite a lot of checks and balances in the process to avoid the fears that Honorable Graham has. But I cannot wish those fears away. She has recorded strong views and the fear around that. So we can further apply our minds on that. That's the only part. But at this stage, I'm not going to necessarily force a decision of the committee in that way. I hope that would not make it difficult for you to do the work.
Indeed, Chairperson, thank you so much. We will try our best.
Okay. Thank you. Would that have been the last item, Ms. Moy and Mr. Ngwepe? Honorable Graham?
Sorry to bring you back, Chair. Can I make a written representation on that item to both you and to the relevant legal experts that are going to be looking at presenting us with the B list, to give consideration to that item, and then we can take it from there. Would that be okay?
That's fine. That's in order. That can be done. Thank you. You happy with that, Ms. Ngema and team? You happy with that?
Indeed, Chairperson. Thank you so
much. Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Chair, we are happy with that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I think this now, thank you very much, Ms. Moy. There's no further item before I wrap up.
No, Chairperson, that was the last one.
Okay. Yeah, this is the last item. So I want to encourage that you work as a team just on those few areas. And we'll await Honorable Graham's suggestions and further contributions. We'll be on standby for that. Hopefully, Honorable Graham, whilst it is fresh in our minds, you will do it still in the next week, this week or next week, so that we don't wait for next year for that. And then we can just apply our minds on that issue. If we're able to do it quicker than next year, we can do that. The program for taking this further will be next year, but to make sure that everything is completed, nothing stops the chair asking for that special session to just do that.
But I want to thank all of you for a very good morning of discussions and presentations from 8 o'clock. It's now 12 o'clock. And those that would have left by now, Stats SA, Information Regulator, South African Reserve Bank, our legal services, and the Secretariat for the work you have put in so far. It's a pity, because it's clear that if we had an extra week, I would have gone very far and concluded everything. But that's where we'll leave it. For now, thank you very much to all of your colleagues. The meeting is adjourned.
Thanks so much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Chair, and everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you, Chair, and everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.